WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. The toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up, get to me. 1-877-920-WGNU. Who do we have all kinds of stuff to talk about, huh? I just want to let you know where some of your money is going, what your good government is spending their money on, so that you understand why your gas prices are so high, why you have no health care, why jobs, good jobs are so hard to find, particularly ones with benefits. U.S. military leaders in Baghdad have put out a bid for a two-year, are you ready for this, $20 million contract. Okay, so what, Liz? $20 million contract. That's chump change in Iraq. It's a $20 million contract for public relations. It's a $20 million public relations contract. Ain't that something? The contract calls for assembling a database of selected news stories and assessing their tone as part of a program to provide a public relations product that would improve the coverage of the military command's performance. Ain't that some stuff? Now, you ask that same government, where did the citizens who were affected by, whose lives have been destroyed by Katrina, where did they all go? Do you have a database of all of the citizens and the fact that they've been scattered to the 12 winds? Do you have any database on that? Did you put any money in trying to find those people so that you can help those people? No. You're going to spend $20 million, at least $20 million, to get a database of, what's the word I'm looking for? What if the word, it begins with a P, ends with an A, begins with a P, propaganda database. You're looking for a propaganda database, and it's going to cost you $20 million to get it done. Huh. And they should be back in office. They should be controlling Congress because why? The party of fiscal responsibility? The man that's closer to God than any other president has been in the history of the goddom? He's spending $20 million for a database so that he can find lies to tell you about what's going on in Iraq. Let's break it down. Let's break it down. Let's break it down. We have much to talk about. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me. Hospice care. Well, families turn to hospice care when facing the terminal illness of a loved one. The Point of Change Hospice provides an environment in which families can cope with the transition of their loved one in the supportive, loving, and comfortable setting of the home. Through pain management, emotional counseling and support, and compassionate health care, the Point of Change Hospice treats the patient as a whole person facing end-of-life issues. Skilled hospice nursing, medical social services, occupational therapy and physical therapy, chaplain and counseling services, bereavement follow-up, trained hospice volunteers. This is never an easy decision. This is never an easy time. So you need somebody that has been there and has the skills to help you through these times. That's Point of Change Hospice. Give them a call. Their counselors are waiting to talk to you. 535-4500. That's 535-4500. Point of Change Hospice. Caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
Connect Care. Still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you're balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost, no obligation. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Turn on your television. I'm watching Martin Luther King, who had a dream. Oh, so take this dream and apply it to your life. Even though we know the ghetto's run, but we got to keep your head up.
I'll keep your head up.
'Cause a new day will come. And love to the sun, even when the darkness shall come. Oh, oh, oh.
Keep your head up, baby. Keep your head up. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up. Get up. Get to me. We have much to talk about. Huh. So, the United States government, our good government, no, this administration is going to spend $20 million in Baghdad for a PR campaign. You want to know why the Republicans are losing this war? You want to know why the Republicans are losing right now? Because all their interest is finding new and expensive ways to lie to you. I mean, they've made a cottage industry out of, and they've made a profitable cottage industry out of finding new and expensive ways to lie to you. And when they're not lying to you, they're finding new and expensive and lawless ways to keep you from getting to the truth. You want more? You're not happy with that? You want more? Okay. All right. The United States has been trying to chew on Hugo Chavez, right? President Chavez. It's one thing to have an opinion about somebody. He's no good, baby. Okay, fine. That's your policy. That's your policy on Hugo Chavez. That's your policy on North Korea. He's no good, baby. Okay, fine. That's your policy on Iraq. That's your policy on Iran. Fine. It's one thing to have an opinion and a belief system and an attitude. It's quite another thing to pay money to try to convince me that your belief, your attitude, is a correct one. But again, this is an administration that spends billions of your dollars to find expensive ways to lie to you or to keep the truth from you. They shall have put a new world of understanding in you, a lie and the truth ain't in you. Lord, check this out. The United States has spent $80 million. $80 million to folks who can find a way to get rid of Hugo Chavez and to create the campaign for the reason to get rid of Hugo Chavez. Did you hear what I just said? $80 million that our good government is taking of our M-O-N-E-Y, our money, our green. All this administration is about is finding new and expensive ways to lie to you. To lie to you. Ain't that something? Ain't that something? The Office of Transition Initiatives, they've overseen more than $26 million to groups in Venezuela since 2002. Since 2002. $47,000 for a Democratic leadership campaign. $37,000 for citizens' meetings to discuss a shared vision for one society. $56,000 to analyze Venezuela's new constitution. Wow. Wow. Our good government is using our money. Doesn't that make you mad? Doesn't that make you mad? They're engaged in regime changes every second of every minute. Every minute of every hour of every day. We're trying to undo some democratically elected dude. You want to know why Haiti's in the situation that it is? Because our good government spends millions of dollars to keep it like that. Y'all need to wake up. And understand what your tax dollars are being used for. And what makes this so repugnant is because so many people are hurting out there. You're spending my tax dollars to unseat a man who has won more elections than you have. Who's had more transparency in his elections than you have. Who has had more people vote than you have. Who has a better reputation in the world than you have. And that's why it's so difficult for me to get health care. That's why people don't have money for stuff. And you're spending money to find expensive ways to lie to me about this person, that person, the other person. And to lie to me. You're spending money to lie to me about Iraq. As if the benefit that you have from the newspapers is not enough. Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? 1-877-920-WGNU. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. Yes, you do. You need to get to me. I ain't done here. I ain't done here.
Good morning, St. Louis, 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Premium Roast Coffees. Eastbound 70-79, expect delays. Northbound 270, traffic is building on either side of 44. Eastbound 40 from 141 through 270, look for heavy volume going on there as well. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill all the way to 270, you've got heavy volume in the right lane. westbound 270 from 367 all the way to 170. Look for no problems to report. Westbound 5570 is slow mid-span into the Poplar Street Bridge. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank all the way into Laclede's Landing is flowing freely. Northbound Route 3 onto the PSB, look for no problems to report. Kings Highway just south of Lindell, there is an accident reported. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Premium Roast Coffee. McDonald's Premium Roast Coffee is now bolder, smoother, and more robust, and it's made just the way you like it. Drive through today and taste it for yourself. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, mostly cloudy in the morning, becoming partly cloudy throughout the day. Isolated showers are possible, high in the upper 70s. For this evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, becoming partly cloudy, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low around 60. For Saturday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-70s. And Sunday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny throughout the day with a high around the upper 70s. Currently, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 68. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need. It's going to be a holiday weekend this weekend, okay? You have an extra day to get your shop on. Take some time. Stroll through the full-service Sears right there at Union and Natural Bridge. Take your time. Chat it up with Jerome Williams. Ask him about the great deals, the special discounts, the wonderful choices that you have there that you don't have at any other Sears. Then make your purchase and take yourself home and make your home into a palace. Come on, get your shop on. My name is Liz Brown. When you get it done, tell him I told you to.
Hi, this is Lizbeth Tanz, co-host of Women Inspiring Women's Authors on the Air program. Each Friday, my co-host Connie Mitchell and I explore the world of writing and interview local and not-so-local authors. We discuss relevant, timely, and occasionally controversial subjects. So come hear just what it takes to write a book and learn something new along with us. Who knows? You might find a new favorite author. That's Authors on the Air, Fridays from 1 to 2 on AM 920 WGNU.
From A to Z, the Black Business Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs.
E.
Do you need a lawyer? A caring lawyer who listens to you? Well, call Earlene McAllister Thomas, 454-1811, for divorce, child support, child custody, criminal defense, accident, workers' comp, name change, or traffic case. Call Earlene Thomas. She's an excellent trial attorney and an aggressive advocate. 454-1811. Don't forget, always check your deck.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Boom, tack, boom, tack. I want a rim shot, eh? Diggy, diggy, a rim shot, eh? Come on, a rim shot.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Miss Brown, the truth will set you free.
Yes,
indeed. Miss Brown, I'm calling you about Mr. Purdy. Did you get the news?
Which news is that?
He won his case.
Of course he won his case.
It was beautiful, Miss Brown. I knew he was going to win that mess. And, Ms. Brown, I want to read you something that our dear mayor said about Mrs. Borishaw right quick. It says, Master Mayor Francis G. Slay has not met with Borishaw, though she said she has requested an audience with him four times.
And he will not call her back.
And, Ms. Brown,
he won't call her back.
It said this, Ms. Brown. Mayor spokesman Ed Rohde said the mayor's office has called her back and asked her to correct the misstatements by Peter Downs, and she said she would get back to us with a response, and we are still waiting to hear from her. And what's going
wait
on?
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight.
Go ahead, Ms.
I'm not going to talk. This is just like grammar school stuff. I'm not going to talk to you till you make him take that back. You make him take that back, because I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Now, understand that Borisov called him before this article. Called him another time before this article. He won't talk to her.
He's a sad, sorry man. Get up, Miss Brown.
So I'm not talking to you because I don't like what he said. Last time I heard, it's free country. Last time I heard that one of Francis Slay's board members called every one of us brown shirts and Nazis, didn't they?
Joe did.
Didn't he?
I'll never forget that.
Didn't he?
Joe did.
Did Francis Slay say take it back? No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. When he called those people Nazis, did he also call Darnetta and Ron Jackson Nazis?
Did not. Did not. And guess who's going to have to pay for that lawsuit? Guess who's going to have to pay for that lawsuit? It's not going to be Bill Purdy. It's not going to be. Now, understand how cavalier these people are. We have Floyd Irons out here suing a board member. We have Ron Jackson. I'm sorry. Where did that come from? We have Ron Jackson out here that signed on to a lawsuit saying that Bill Purdy shouldn't have been able to run for office.
Yes, ma'am.
Shouldn't have been able to run for office, but he approved him because all the school board members have to approve all of the candidates running for office.
Sure did.
So you a double fool.
Yes, ma'am.
You a double fool. Why do I hiccup every time I say that man's name? I don't know why I hiccup every time I say that man's name. Ron Jackson. I don't know why I said that.
And who'd you say gonna pay for this lawsuit, Ms. Brown?
It's not gonna be Bill Purdy. It's not gonna be Bill Purdy. You need to ask Ron Jackson who's gonna be paying for that lawsuit.
Well, according to Channel 4 News,
it's gonna be Ron Jackson.
Ms. Brown, according to Channel 4 News, you don't have to believe me, or if you listen, always call Channel 4. They don't want to let it out. They said he won. He can stay on the board.
Of course he can. Mm-hmm. Of course he can.
You sure can stay on the board. And this sorry, sad mayor we got, Miss Brown, we taught him a lesson. We're going to teach him again. Bring us some more mess, Miss Brown. We're going to be ready for us, too.
And here's the thing, and I understand why Francis, or Franny, as they call him. I understand why Franny is huddled in his up in City Hall. I understand why he's huddled there, kicking his feet. Have you ever seen a baby boy throw a tantrum? How they lay on the floor and they kick their legs and they kick their legs and they kick their legs and screaming because they nothing can console them. I understand why Franny's like that. I understand why Franny is kicking his legs and screaming and howling like an inconsolable little brat. I understand why he's doing that, because he can't get his way. He tried to deliver Jeff Smith, his ward to Jeff Smith, and more people voted against Jeff Smith than voted for him in his own ward. I understand why he's over there kicking the furniture and saying those big old grown-up cuss words to folks, because he tried to deliver his board and nobody in his ward voted for his people. They voted for Donna Jones and for Peter Downs. I understand why he's throwing it, but the fact of the matter is the unfortunate reality is that we all suffer, just like everybody in the family suffers when there's some baby out there throwing a fit, right? Because
right.
The family can't do what they need to do, because you got to deal with this baby first. So that's what's happening in the city of St. Louis. We're not dealing with the issues that we need to. We have Francis Slay is saying, if I can't have my toys, nobody can play with my toys. He's keeping money from the babies. He's doing everything. And the city of St. Louis is suffering while Francis Slay throws a hissy fit.
Miss Brown, I can't remind us when his term is up, because he's got to come out of there.
Oh, he has a good little time ahead of him.
Remind your listening audience why he won't meet with Dr. Borisov.
That's fact.
Your audience why he won't meet with this woman.
Remember, Dr. Borisov has been in office for 2 months.
That's right.
So Peter Downs wrote a column saying that he was like George Wallace standing in the front of the schoolhouse in the fact because he is keeping money from the St. Louis schools in order to keep the St. Louis schools from opening.
Yes,
if that's not
Brian,
George Wallace, I don't know who George Wallace is.
And Ms. Bryant, as long as he's down there at City Hall on Tucker Street, he was determined to destroy this school district. But we told him, no, stay over at City Hall.
And we're all suffering. We're all suffering while he throws his hissy fit.
Ms. Brown, you're right. And Ms. Brown, like I keep telling your listening audience, remind them why he won't meet with Dr. Borshaw. Ms. Brown, you have a beautiful day. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. 1-877-920-WGNU. I want to remind you all that tomorrow, the International Urban Institute meets, and we are going to be doing something very special. We're showing the documentary Spike Lee's When the Levees Broke in 4 parts. Starting at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, we're going to be showing the movie When the Levees Broke. I'm very excited to do this. It's the anniversary of Katrina, and it's time that we, as a community, as an entity, as an organization, collectively gather to evaluate the lessons from Katrina and the applications of those lessons in the political world that we live in right now. Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. to 11 a.m., each hour, a different story about why, what happened when the levees broke in New Orleans. The address is 1020 North Taylor. 1020 North Taylor. And here's the other piece of it. You need to understand the connection of what we're doing here. The Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality, the black firefighters, they're the ones that are making it possible every Saturday for us to gather together. They are supportive of us in our actions. So you need to understand the beginning collective act that is going on now. There are things that are happening in our community, and they are powerful ones. And I'd like to extend an invitation to you and your family to come out. It's free. A little breakfast going to be there for you. A little continental breakfast for you going to be there. So come on out tomorrow morning from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the International Urban Institute. The address is 1020 North Taylor. That's 1020 North Taylor. Taylor, the International Urban Institute, tomorrow from 7 a.m. We're going to 11 a.m. Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be such a good time, and I'm excited for everybody to see this. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. It's on the front page of the paper. They finally catch up to what we've been saying here on the wake-up call. The greedy old party. That's what they call the GOP, the greedy old party. It's lagging in key races of the Senate. Huh? Check this out. Minnesota. The Democrat leads the Republican, and it's a woman, 50-40%. And these are the key races. In Missouri, Claire McCaskill and Jim Talent are tied amongst registered voters. Now, feel this. The state of Missouri is what? Is it a red state or a blue state? It ain't blue. It's a red state. Jim Talent is an incumbent. Claire McCaskill is tied with him amongst registered voters. Do you realize what a significant thing that is at this point in the campaign? That you're tied with an incumbent in a red state where George Bush has come in and raised millions of dollars for Jim Talent, and there hasn't been any TV battle. Oh yes, there has. Jim Talent put some black commercials up on TV in black St. Louis and black Kansas City, saying how black he I guess he's doing the Jeff Smith piece. How black thou art. Come on, folks. In the state of Missouri, Claire McCaskill is tied with Jim Talent, and it is after Jim Talent has spent millions of dollars on campaign, on advertising. On television advertising,
Oh, I say it's a good race. Montana, the Democrat is leading the Republican by 48 to 45. In Ohio, 46 to 40. And in Pennsylvania, the Democrat is also leading Rick Santorum, 56% to 38%. You think Rick's going to win? I don't know, y'all. With the numbers looking like this, you know what those, you know what the greedy old party's going to do? I say duck come election day after you vote. Stay with me. What is hospice care? Well, let me tell you what hospice care is. Hospice care is what the Point of Change Hospice provides. They provide physical, emotional, practical, and spiritual care for adults and children in the last phases of a terminal illness. They provide services such as skilled hospice nursing, medical social services, home health aides, and homemakers. Occupational therapy, physical therapy, chaplain and counseling services, bereavement follow-up, support for the terminally ill and their family, and trained hospice volunteers. There are also physician-ordered services that the Point of Change provides as well, medical equipment, medical supplies, medications for pain management, relief, and comfort. And the special part of the Point of Change Hospice is you don't have to leave your home. They come to you. They come to you because studies have shown that individuals can maintain their dignity and make their eternal transition in peace with the right tools and the right opportunities. The Point of Change Hospice, they accept Medicare, Medicaid, private health insurance. You don't have to worry about money at all. What a wonderful thing that is. Please give them a call. One of their counselors is waiting to talk to you. 535-4500. That's 535-4500. The Point of Change Hospice. Caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline, Washington. The captain of the USS Cole, the vessel that was attacked by an Al-Qaeda speedboat and heavily damaged 6 years ago, says he has been denied chances for promotion because top brass think he should have done more to protect the ship. Commander Kirk Lippold currently has a desk job at the Pentagon and says the head of the Navy, Admiral Mike Mullen, made every effort to override the judgment of a panel that had recommended a promotion for him. He said he was singled out as the only person to be held responsible for the attack. He also said the Cole was sent to Aden even though there was information that terrorists were active in Yemen. Many of the relatives of the 17 Americans who were killed in that attack have been vocal in their assertions that Lippold had been made the scapegoat in the incident. An official inquiry determined that there was nothing he could have done as commanding officer to prevent the attack. Still, Navy Secretary Donald Winter had said that he was of the opinion that Commander Lippold's action did not meet the high standards expected of commanding officers. The chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Senator John Warner, said that he would call for a public hearing on the attack if Lippold's name was ever brought to his committee for a promotion. And a Dateline Phoenix. The Arizona State Police are experimenting with a new device that's mounted on the front of some patrol cars and reads the license plates of other vehicles on the road. That information is fed into a computer and checks the plate against a list of stolen vehicles or against a list of owners who may be wanted for other types of crimes. The computer starts beeping and then tells the officer there's a problem and he should pull the car over to check it out. The system is designed to check about 1,500 plates over an 8-hour shift. Last year, Arizona had the third highest vehicle theft rate in the country. The state is also considering some fixed units to be located along roadways near the Mexican border. There is some concern that the devices could allow the government to start tracking the travel patterns of drivers. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Hi, I'm Vicki Pimentel, inviting you to join me right here on WGNU 920 AM on Friday nights for a little sports talk. We'll drop the gloves, scuffle a bit, and in the end, line up and shake hands. Yeah, right.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up. Get up. Get to me. Where do we begin, y'all? Where do we begin? All these fake news stories out here, paid for by your good government. Okay, let's move away from fake news stories. Let's move to what some of the stories really are out here. Some of the stories that are really being told out here. 700 tons. That's a lot of weight. That's a lot of weight. 700 tons. You see, our good government, this administration said, I think it would be a good plan to detonate 700 tons of military explosives in the state of Indiana. I think that that would be a good idea. That's what our good government said. The Department of Defense was considering conducting the largest non-nuclear blast in the United States history. 45 minutes south of Bloomington, Indiana, our good government said, here, let's blow some stuff up. Let's blow some stuff up. And the twisted, messed up, twisted minds of these people, these sick puppies. That's all I can say. They're these sick puppies. You know what this administration calls the implosion of, or the explosion of, 700 tons of bombs? You know what they call that? Divine strike. If that's not a sick puppy statement, I don't know what is. How could you connect bombs with divinity? How do you do that? Except if you a sick puppy. Or, unless you're talking about 9/11 and your name is George W. Bush. Only a sick puppy, a sick twisted puppy, would look Americans in the face and say that, look, It's only 700 tons of bombs. It's not nuclear. Huh? Huh? These sick puppies said, first of all, it makes sense to drop 700 tons of military explosives in an Indiana quarry 45 minutes from Bloomington. And we can do it without telling the public about it. Now, the sick puppies didn't look at what would be, they didn't consider, and I'm not a geologist. I'm not an herbologist. I'm just a human being sitting here living in the world as best I can, but it makes sense to me that the question should be asked, or the word should be said, groundwater. Groundwater. How about the lime stone cave system? Did any of these sick, stupid puppies out here consider the location of the New Madrid Fault? Did any of these sick puppies consider that? No, they said, let's just go blow some stuff up. 700 tons. Party on, rock on, dude. I've got my lawn chairs and I've got my six-pack. Let's blow some stuff up. One person who organized the opposition to this sick puppy act said, and I quote, words fail me in saying how insane this is. Words fail me in how insane this is. It's crazy. It's madness. It's madness. Operation Divine Strike. I'm sorry, Divine Strake, Strake. This is outrageous. And I know. Operation Carpet Bomb Indiana. Is that what the plan is? I don't know, Howard. Is that the plan? Operation Carpet Bomb Indiana? Sick, twisted puppies. And, did I happen to mention that this was a project that was, what's the word I'm looking for? It was a private contract. Private contract. Wonder how much money they got to come up with this genius idea. Because, you see, when it's private money, they don't get any money. They don't get paid unless some bombs get exploded. Operation Divine Strike. My name is Liz Brown. These are just amazing times that we live in. These are stunning times that we live in. These are breathtaking times that we live in. Michael.
Yes, I have a question. I was wondering if Hugo Chavez was also organizing the other Latin American countries around him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's paid off some countries' debt to the World Bank. He is providing oil to companies. He's rallying China. He's rallying Russia. He's rallying everybody that he can get around him. Absolutely.
Okay, I have another question. Will it be possible for the president of Iran to go to the United Nations to speak on the actions of what's going on right now?
I don't know. I don't know. Thanks for your call and question. We got to take a break. I'll be back with Looking Black. Stay with me.
progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brothers.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
Believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger, Virginia. You are next. Tropical storm Ernesto roared ashore in the North Carolina coast last night. It was almost hurricane strength, and it brought a lot of rain and wind with it. It's calm for now, but the threat is not over yet. ABC's Nancy Wiener is in Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina.
Daria, Ernesto came ashore just a few miles to the south of us, and so we saw the strongest winds here in Wrightsville Beach, just a few miles per hour shy of hurricane strength, about 70 miles per hour. But the big story here was not the wind. It was the rain. Unofficially, 10 inches of rain fell just overnight here in Wrightsville Beach. And so this morning in North Carolina, they're going to be keeping a close eye on swollen rivers and streams. This state has seen a lot of rain from summer storms over the past week, and there is concern that swollen streams and rivers could overflow today. Daria?
Officials in Washington, D.C., who are still a little shell-shocked after the last round of flooding, have already declared a state of emergency. The National Guard is on call. Hurricane John's gotten stronger as it heads for Mexico's Baja California Peninsula. Forecasters say John had maximum sustained winds of 115 miles an hour and could drop up to 18 inches of rain in places. It's expected to make landfall later on today. We're getting a little bit of a break at the gas pumps, and that may be why more of us are saying, you know what, let's go out of town on this last weekend of the summer.
Gasoline prices have dropped a little in the last few weeks, and at this truck stop, a gallon of regular unleaded goes for $2.45. Chris Anthony still can't afford a weekend getaway, although he's considered trading in his big pickup truck with its V10 engine and 35-gallon gas tank.
Then again, I can't carry all my tools and all my equipment with me, you know, so, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 here. Either get economy and save money or you go to work, one of the two.
This Labor Day weekend finds more Americans driving and fewer flying to their end-of-summer destinations.
That's ABC's Jim Ryan. This is ABC News.
We're here at the Skip Barber Racing School, where the only tire brand you'll find is B.F. Goodrich tires. B.F. Goodrich G-Force tires are the fastest street tires in sport compact history. The number one street tire for 2 years in a row. They're the world's hottest street tires. B.F. Goodrich tires, now featured at Auto Tire, the Tire Pros.
Visit any Auto Tire, the Tire Pros, from August 7th to September 3rd and receive an instant $50 off custom wheels, accessories, warranties, and services when you buy four new B.F. Goodrich G-Force tires. See store for details.
B.F. Goodrich tires, take control!
This Labor Day, make the most of your time and save big at Lowe's Big Labor Day event. Right now, get 20% off plus free propane exchange and free assembly on all full-size gas grills, $99 and up. Get 20% off all special order wood flooring, carpet, and area rugs. Use your Lowe's consumer card and pay nothing for 12 months on any purchase of $299 or more now through September 4th. See store for details while supplies last. Hurry into Lowe's Big Labor Day event, where you'll get great values on everything you need in one trip, saving you time and gas. Lowe's, let's build something together.
President Bush wants the FCC to get tough with people who use bad language when they're on the air. Well, would that apply to his now infamous open mic incident? Here's ABC's Clarissa Douglas.
The president was talking with British Prime Minister Tony Blair at the G8 summit in July when the fighting between Israel and the Hezbollah militia was intense. Mr. Bush commented on the conflict, apparently thinking the microphone was off.
The irony is that what they need to do is get Syria and get Hezbollah to stop doing it.
The president's remark was heard in full on cable channels like CNN, which are not subject to FCC fines. But at least one viewer complained that the word was included in a broadcast by an NBC television affiliate. Clarissa Douglas, ABC News, Washington.
Want to keep the dentist drill out of your mouth? Chew some gum. Seriously, a German company has developed one to fight tooth decay. You're going to have to wait for it, though. No word when it will be tested, let alone on the market.
I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, a University City third grader is suspended for allegedly bringing a gun to school. Officials say other students reported that the 9-year-old boy was showing off the weapon at recess at Nathaniel Hawthorne Elementary School on Wednesday. The gun wasn't loaded and apparently belonged to the boyfriend of the child's mother. The boy has been suspended for 10 days and could face more discipline after a hearing. The search continues for a suspect in a fatal shooting in North St. Louis. Police say 44-year-old Anthony Porter was shot in the leg and back while riding his bicycle in the 4200 block of Penrose early yesterday morning. Porter later died while in surgery at an area hospital. Witnesses reported seeing a blue vehicle chasing Porter shortly before the shooting. There's some good news for motorists this Labor Day holiday. The Missouri Department of Transportation will pick up all construction beginning at noon today. Chris Sutton, spokesperson for MoDOT, says that'll help keep motorists safer and protects MoDOT workers from drivers who may be under the influence. All road work will be on hold until 9 o'clock Tuesday morning. Finally this hour, gasoline expands when the temperature is above 65 degrees, but fuel pumps can't tell the difference. Democratic Senate candidate Claire McCaskill says that's unfair to consumers.
As people fill their tanks this weekend, on a late summer weekend, they're not going to get the amount of gas they're paying for, and we need to do something about that.
McCaskill proposes requiring oil companies to install new temperature-sensing smart pumps or retrofit their old ones. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Chaser Plus. This Labor Day, use a designated driver to avoid accidents. And to avoid hangovers, take Chaser. Chaser absorbs toxins to help you wake up feeling great. Buy Chaser products at Walgreens, CVS, and GNC stores. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. 270 at St. Charles Rock Road is a vehicle on fire. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and Mid Rivers, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 is slow from Gravoy through Marshall. Look for eastbound 40 from 141 to 270. Expect heavy volume going on there as well. Westbound 270 at New Halls Ferry and New Florissant. Look for congestion going on there. Westbound 40 from Hanley to 170. Look for slow traffic in the right lane. All your approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge and into downtown are starting to stack up this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play pick three from the Illinois Lottery. Watch for the green ball double draw. One green ball, two chances to win. Illinois Lottery, have a ball, play responsibly. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, mostly cloudy in the morning, then partly cloudy throughout the afternoon. Isolated showers, a high in the upper 70s. For this evening, partly cloudy in the evening, mostly cloudy overnight with a low around 60. For Saturday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-70s. And Sunday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny throughout the afternoon with a high in the upper 70s. Currently, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 67. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It is Looking Black. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. Tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. To you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace.
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up. Get up. Get to me. 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, you can do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. Well, here we go. I want to first tell you, remind you of what we are doing on Saturday. We are, the International Urban Institute is meeting on Saturday. And we are doing something very special. We are showing the When the Levees Broke, the documentary by Spike Lee about what happened with Katrina. Four parts to this, four different stories. It's not a continuous movie, it's four different stories about what happened when the levee broke. And it is going to, we're going to start showing it at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. The address is 1020 North Taylor, 1020 North Taylor, from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. And a lot of you don't have HBO, or even if you do, I'm sure many of you didn't have a chance to watch all 4 hours of it. So come on down to the International Urban Institute. We'll have something for you to nosh upon. There'll be food for you. And then there will be the movie, the documentary. So come on down tomorrow. The address is 1020 North Taylor. The location is provided to us by the Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality, Black firefighters in the city of St. Louis. We are very grateful to have their generosity, and we are grateful for their support. For us and our organization. We're bringing a number of things together, folks. A number of things. So come on out tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. at 1020 North Taylor, at the International Urban Institute's showing of Spike Lee's documentary, When the Levees Broke, in four parts.
1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. We'll be back. Stay with us. Is hospice care. Families turn to hospice care when facing the terminal illness of a loved one. The Point of Change Hospice provides an environment in which families can cope with the transition of their loved one in the supportive, loving, and comfortable setting of their own home. Founded in 2001, the Point of Change Hospice provides physical, emotional, practical, and spiritual care for adults and children in the last phases of a terminal illness, providing skilled hospice nursing, medical social services, occupational therapy, physical therapy, trained hospice volunteers, bereavement follow-up, as well as physician-ordered services, medical equipment, medical supplies, medications for pain management, relief, and comfort. The Point of Change Hospice accepts Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance. Please give them a call. One of their counselors is waiting to talk to you at 535-4500. That's 535-4500. Caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
Hello, this is Brother Willie Loudon. Join me every Sunday morning at 8:30 and Let's Praise Him broadcast. Good gospel music and the latest church news to help you start your Sunday morning. So tune in on the Let's Praise Him broadcast every Sunday morning at 8:30 right here on WGNU.
This is the sound of a bully at school.
Where'd you get the shirt? Colorblind and things?
And this is the sound of a kid telling her parents about the bully. If you don't hear about it from your kid, that doesn't mean it's not happening.
McGruff the Crime Dog here about how parents can tell if bullying is upsetting their children. Kids may avoid school. Grades may suffer. Stop bullies with words to your kids, school officials, or other concerned parents, and at McGruff.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryant.
Edition of Looking Black, a review of issues that have impacted your life this week and where they may take us next from differing perspectives. Here's Liz Brown and our guest journalists for this week.
Welcome, welcome to Lookin' Black. My guest journalist this hour, this week, is Jared Ball of VoxUnion.com, joining us from Washington, D.C. Jared, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Getting over a little cold, seasonal change type of thing, but other than that, I can't complain.
All right, now. So we're a year outside of Katrina, Jared.
I'm sorry?
We're a year outside of Katrina.
Yes.
How we doing?
Not well, by my estimation. Just trying to follow what I think pretty much keep up with what everybody else is keeping up with, and noticing that despite George Bush going on black radio this past week and suggesting that poverty does have something to do with the problems in New Orleans, I don't think we're making enough headway into addressing not only what took place that led to what happened in New Orleans, which, again, I would I just want to join those who suggest that it wasn't a natural disaster, it wasn't Katrina that was the problem, but as Spike accurately named his own documentary, it's about the levees breaking.
That's right.
So we're nowhere in terms of fixing that. We're nowhere in terms of fixing the underlying poverty and race issues that led to that. And we're not doing enough to deal with the environmental problems that some are suggesting, and I would tend to agree, are going to potentially set up places like my own city of D.C., even New York, Savannah, Georgia, and Baltimore from experiencing the same thing as the barrier islands that protect these areas are facing a potential threat of a 3 feet rise in global water levels, which would wipe out those islands and leave us just as vulnerable as New Orleans was should there be another hurricane or something like that that comes around here. So,
did Boy George mention the R word? Did he mention race at all?
Not that I saw.
I didn't see it anywhere.
But his suggestions, of course, were that the poverty that existed in New Orleans or exists in New Orleans is about poor education and lack of business and home ownership among the black population. Now, that may all very well be true, but as I'm sure you would agree, this is not an accident, and this is not about the failings or the inherent or innate inability of black people to develop a strong economic base.
Well, George Bush is the poster child for poor education. You can go far with poor education.
Well, if your daddy is the former president and head of the CIA, your C student will get you anywhere.
There you go. There you go.
But for the great majority of us, that's just not how it works.
And that's not how we roll. Now, I want to come back to Katrina, but I've been dying to ask you the question.
Mm-hmm.
The question that the discussion that's all out there right now about Survivor. About dividing Survivor into four groups based upon ethnic makeup. Asian, Hispanic, people of African descent, and white folks. What you think about it?
First, I must admit, deriving some comedic pleasure from listening to Rush Limbaugh's take on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually happened to hear a little bit of what he said on his radio show.
Is this the Archie Bunkering of race again, that people are going to feel comfortable with saying all of the things that they believe are determined by race?
Absolutely. And I think it also shows, again, how we aren't making any kinds of strides into dealing with the true underlying nature of what race is, again, it being a construct of elite white men to divide and rule. And it looks, again, like this airs on ABC, right?
That's correct.
So it looks like, again, the Disney Corporation is having more fun with...
And carrying out the legacy of Walt Disney.
Absolutely.
Let's be clear. Walt Disney was an avowed racist.
Right.
So it's very interesting to see. I'm sorry, it's on CBS. It's not on ABC.
Oh, okay.
It's on
my
CBS.
Apologies.
Okay, my apologies, too. It's on CBS.
So that's Viacom.
That's Viacom. That's Viacom.
And as I'd like to talk with you in a few minutes, in terms of what Viacom does with radio here in D.C., They're doing the, it's the same kind of, it is just that. They're having fun with these constructs that have been used to divide us up and abuse us all. And rather than, you know, being about, well, I mean, this is what media does, and that's really my point in all of this. This is what media's role is in a society that is dependent upon using psychic manipulation to maintain social order.
But can, yeah, can we talk, Jared, about the criticisms of it? And I'd like your take on whether or not this is something that should be done. I've had dozens and dozens of discussions with my friends about their take on it. And I don't have a take on it yet. I want to see it. I have never watched Survivor before, and I want to see this. Because to me, it's like, let America see the raw, meaning the potentiality of race in this country. Let's see, because the white folks on Survivor have already defined themselves as, we're the front runners on this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They believe that they're the front runners based on race. I think it should be a fascinating thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I can agree with that. I don't. I have no interest in watching it. I mean, and mainly because never or rarely do I see mainstream commercial media accurately dealing with issues of race or class.
Okay.
So the potential for this show to expose underlying realities, I think, will be washed away with people being caught up. You may, given your background, watch it and derive something that most viewers will not. But I think that that by and large, the majority of viewers, those who are more likely to tune into reality television in the first place, or so-called reality television in the first place, are going to be caught up in the nonsensical drama and miss any kind of relevant or potentially valuable lesson that could be learned in this. I just don't think that issues this serious can ever get decent coverage or fair run in that kind of space. So,
I guess part of the watching of it is not as much to watch and see what happens on the screen, but to watch what happens on the screen and to see what is said about it in the aftermath of it, and to let people reveal themselves in the aftermath of it.
Sure. No, I mean, you know, again, I think that those in your position with your background and your particular frame of reference can use it and gain some. I mean, and in that sense, I can understand and agree that, you know, it is sometimes, if not always, important to at least be aware of what is being done and being said. The same way that I might listen to, occasionally, as I just mentioned, a Rush Limbaugh, or even watch the O'Reilly Factor. It's to learn what is being said in those spaces by those kinds of people, so I could use it for future analysis. But I just don't think I can bring myself to check this one out. I'll have to rely on the analysis of you and others. I just can't. Again, the psychic abuse in this case is just going to be a bit much for me.
Now, I'm not saying I'm going to be able to last through the whole thing. I'm just saying I'm going to watch. I'm not saying I may not be able to hang all the way through.
Well, I'll tell you what, after it comes on, I'll be sure to tune in and check out how you handle the, you know, how you gauge the response and the overall damage it's going to do. But, like I said, I just, you know, if at this point with Katrina, with just the every, you know, the average everyday, you know, living experience that we all have in this society, if we need, you know, the fact that we may need a show like this to wake us up to the horrors of white supremacy and capitalism, I think that it just sort of speaks again to what kind of troubled state we're all in at this point. And, so, like I said, I wish you well, and I'm sure your mental self-defense and fitness, Chuck once said, will be strong enough, and I'll check out your analysis after.
Okay, Jared, we're going to take a break.
Stay with us.
This is Looking Black. I'm Liz Brown. We'll be back.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Shell. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and Mid Rivers, look for slow traffic there. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Marshall, it's stop and go. Eastbound 40 between 141 and 270, look for heavy volume going on there as well. And westbound 270 from 367 to 170 is starting to slow down a bit. Westbound 270 from New Halls Ferry to New Florissant, expect congestion there. Westbound 70 at Earth City Expressway and Blanchett Bridge, two left lanes are closed still for road work. And westbound 5570 on the PSB, westbound King Bridge, northbound Route 3, and westbound Eads Bridge. Look for some delays as you're rolling into downtown this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Shell. Shell is giving away free gas for life to six lucky winners and tons of other prizes. The million-gallon giveaway only at Shell, made to move. See official rules for participating Shell stations. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. Mostly cloudy in the morning, partly cloudy throughout the day with isolated showers, high in the upper 70s this evening. Partly cloudy, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low around 60. Saturday, mostly cloudy, high in the mid-70s. And Sunday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny by the afternoon, high in the upper 70s. Currently, we have 78 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's Looking Black. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else indeed are you going to get washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves? You're going to get them at Sears, and you're going to get them right in the neighborhood where you live. That's right, at the corner of Union and Natural Bridge. Jerome Williams will provide the customer service that you have never experienced in your entire days of shopping. I'm telling you, it doesn't get any better. And the great deals that are there, and the great location of a look. It's a holiday weekend. It's time to start reevaluating. You need some more stuff for your house? Get on over to Sears and get it done. My name is Liz Brown. Tell them I told you to.
Hi, this is Lethea Owens with a personal invitation to join me for Motivational Mondays, where your dreams become reality. Part of Women Inspiring Women every Monday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU. I believe when you follow your purpose, you have no choice but to be phenomenally successful, because all of the resources and opportunities you need become attracted to you. So join me, Lethea Owens, for Motivational Mondays, part of Women Inspiring Women, every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Love makes me treat you the way that I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you?
Looking Black, the week in review, the week ahead, in differing perspectives with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call Looking Black. It's Friday. Our guest journalist this Friday is Jared Ball of VoxUnion.com, joining us from Washington, D.C. Jared, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So what else has caught your eye?
Well, I'd like to share with you and your listeners something that I'm working on establishing here in D.C. as part of an effort, a national effort led by Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon.
Who we love.
Who I know you know and love. News for the People Coalition. And what we're trying to do is increase awareness and pay more attention to and get more black people involved in addressing and challenging our local media environment to put some kind of pressure on local commercial media to adopt some changes. And more importantly, to increase awareness among people in the community for the need to develop and support alternative and underground presses. And my particular avenue into this, you know, Glenn and Bruce, more experienced in political and journalistic brothers, have the concern that stems from the civil rights era, where local black radio made itself open and available to local journalistic news coverage, particularly of organizational and civil rights or black power struggles. So, you know, when Dr. King and the Montgomery Improvement Association, for instance, needed to get the word out about the bus boycott, they had any number of local black radio stations to go to promote their efforts. In today's world, the concern is, I think a very real one, is that for those of us engaged in any kind of activist organizing, we do not have such an outlet. We are not able to go to popular local black radio and get on the air and make announcements and share information. My own particular avenue into this comes through, you know, my study and work around hip-hop and supporting local artists, particularly those of a particular political background, and noticing the industry's ability to lock them out from the airwaves. So as we look at, again, issues I've talked with you about before, payola and the construction of playlists, which have a long history that is really connected to social control and a maintenance, kind of in like in the same vein of what we were just talking about among the, about the division of races, in establishing and separating distinct populations more easily manipulated. So, for instance, in the 50s, when people heard about the early payola scandals, which is simply pay for play, for those who may not be aware, where record labels would just pay, at that time, DJs to get their artists on the air, people like Alan Freed had their careers destroyed, not only because they accepted payola, but because people like Alan Freed actually accepted and established venues for black artists to play their music in front of mixed-race crowds, which was at the time taboo, and which I would argue for the most part is taboo today in certain settings. In other words, it's okay for there to be a mixed-race crowd to see a show, a hip-hop show, you know, for T.I. or Chingy or one of those kinds of artists that promote the, you know, violence and blinging and misogyny, because it's okay to unify across racial lines on that basis. But it's not okay to have that kind of popular unity on the basis of something more substantive or politically radical. So Alan Freed had his career destroyed. Dick Clark, who did the exact same thing and actually did it worse, considering that he owned a record label, so he was able to use payola to basically pay himself to put artists, his own artists, on American Bandstand, and he maintained the strict social codes of segregation. So he was, of course, rewarded with a long career. My point being that in today's...
So you didn't celebrate. So you didn't celebrate Dick Clark at the Emmys the other night.
No, I missed that. Thank goodness
okay.
I missed that.
Okay.
But that's really the point. So Alan Freed drinks himself to death after losing his career, and Dick Clark is getting awards, as you said, at the Emmys. The problem in today's world is that we have a media environment so controlled, so locked down, that local D.C. residents who tune into the two major black-targeted or urban-targeted radio stations, Viacom's WPGC, which leads the way, and our dear sister Kathy Hughes' Radio 1.
Can we talk about that, please?
I would love to.
Can we talk about that, please?
Well, the problem is that despite the overarching image of a black-owned Radio 1 network, and I'll give her some credit for allowing at least some degree of progressivism to occur on her AM station. The bottom line is that the popular FM radio is dominated. She allows it to be run just like any other commercial network. So on the one hand, there's no local reporting on either of those stations. Kathy Hughes does not employ any local journalists at any of her stations in the nation. She just pipes in ABC News, which is even more damaging. But she allows her playlist to be constructed up until recently by a middle-aged 50s white woman from the South.
With country music background.
With country music background. She just resigned from that position earlier this year. But nonetheless, the playlists come out about the same. So as I'm looking at them now, just last week on Kathy Hughes's radio station, you got the number one. You got Young Dro playing with his song "Shoulder Lean" about just sort of gangsterism and pimping. Got played 74 times last week. 71 times last week, rather. Young Jock got played 70 times last week. Neo is, I guess this new R&B sexy young kid thing, 68 times. Lil Jon, Snap Your Fingers, 62 times. My point being is that we are being inundated with gross repetition of songs that have harmful lyrics, harmful imagery, and are blocking out. The more important part about that is that if you're playing these songs that many times in one week, you're making it impossible for any other artist to be heard or to be heard with enough repetition to have it sink in. So what we're trying to do is establish meetings in D.C., Atlanta, Chicago, and I think ultimately L.A. to start to begin this national organization to get people to be more aware that their media environment is highly controlled and regulated. It is all run from a top-down position, and it is not the artists, by the way, who are the primary culprits in this, in that most of them are young, most of them don't have the wherewithal to withstand or defend themselves against the promises of wealth and fame, but it is the record labels and their cohorts in the consolidated radio environment that make it possible for them to promote or to shelve. That's the other important part about this, kind of like Walter Rodney's The Dialectic of Development and Underdevelopment, that you don't just develop one side without underdeveloping the other, so that when you promote, when you have the ability to promote anything you want to sort of lock down the range of acceptable thought among your audience, you are also able to shelve, or in other words, make disappear anybody that you would also like to assure never gets heard or a fair run hearing in the public. So we're trying to get people to be more aware about that, and they can absolutely, if they have online access, check us out at voxunion.com. I'd also like to let people know that if they're interested in more information, they can call us toll-free at 866-206-9069, extension 5413.
And one of the things that we're doing here in St. Louis, we've created this, Alderwoman Irene J. Smith and myself have created this entity, and the community has created this entity called the International Urban Institute. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're doing this weekend is we're showing the Spike Lee When the Levees Broke piece.
Right.
And what we have done is that we, because of the political environment that we live in right now, because our African politicians go so often unattended,
right,
that they become corrupted by the environment that they enter into, that there has to be an entity out here that is monitoring what they are doing.
Right.
And reporting to the community and putting pressure upon them to stay true to the reason why they were elected, and that's because of the African community.
That's right. And that's, again, that's similar to our effort here with CBC Monitor. And as we're getting ready to gear up for this year's Congressional Black Caucus, the annual convention, the Congressional Black Caucus, we have to be vigilant and on top of that, because our supposed black leaders or African leaders are not.
Harold Ford is an example of it. I mean, it's a scary, scary, scary example of a man who even said that his grandmother was white.
Right.
That's how far he has gone in order to try and obtain a Senate seat.
Right.
And if that's the future of our of the black caucus, we are hosed.
Right. That's exactly the problem. And with Cynthia McKinney being ousted, that just makes the problem that much more severe. She was one of the few. And I'm aware and hear the criticisms of how she handled her campaign, and she didn't do enough to solidify her local base.
Shouldn't we also make the point that Georgia is different than 90% of the other states in the union?
Mm.
Any other election, and they counted the votes, that person would have won.
Right.
Okay, so she had to have a runoff because she didn't get over 50%
right
of the votes. She won the first round.
Well,
now, you know, so I think that needs to be factored into the assessment of her losing as well.
Oh no, I'm not one who would put her loss on as I was saying any flaw in her you know local organizing effort. I was just simply saying that despite hearing a little bit about that the real issue is that she had to be removed because she's one of the few voices that we had that was actually doing her job.
There you go. And we have to take a break. I'm talking to Jared Ball of VoxUnion.com. This is Looking Black. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me. What is hospice care? Families turn to hospice care when facing the terminal illness of a loved one. The Point of Change Hospice provides an environment in which families can cope with the transition of their loved one in the supportive, loving, and comfortable setting of their home. Founded in 2001, the Point of Change Hospice provides physical, emotional, practical, and spiritual care for adults and children in the last phases of a terminal illness. Services provided by Point of Change Hospice, Skilled Hospice Nursing, Medical Social Services, Chaplain and Counseling Services, Bereavement Follow-Up, Trained Hospice Volunteers, Occupational Therapy, and Physical Therapy. There's also physician-ordered services, whether it's medical equipment, medical supplies, or medications for pain and relief and pain and comfort. Point of Change Hospice accepts Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance. Please give them a call. One of their counselors is waiting to talk to you. 535-4500. That's 535-4500. The Point of Change Hospice. Caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
This is a short wake-up call. Global News Update. Dateline, New York. A story in the latest edition of the Carnegie Reporter says that the future of the American news industry is being driven by the movement of the younger generation away from traditional sources of news. A survey of the news habits of the age group 18 to 34 indicates that their news sources are internet sites, handheld devices, blogs, and instant messaging. They're no longer relying on traditional sources such as newspapers, news magazines, or broadcast media to find out what's happening in their world. Only local television shows up as a source of news once or twice a week for them. This explains why afternoon newspapers are all but extinct and that why many cities now only have one or two major newspapers. You're also seeing younger anchors and reporters on most of the major TV news operations, and many of them have internet news backgrounds. Networks are gearing up to begin delivering news broadcasts on wireless devices such as cell phones to meet the "when I want it" demands of the new generation. But what is most troubling to the news industry is the pervasive attitude that news is no longer that important to the younger generation, and that what they perceive as news is shaped more by impressions they receive from many sources they come in contact with. That is to say, a couple of lines from an instant text message on the subway ride, as opposed to a full read of a story at the breakfast table. You may recall how during the last presidential campaign there were more references to websites and how bloggers played a big part during the entire election season. The study concludes that news organizations need to rethink their product development and business approaches and consider how technology and education can work together to their advantage. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
This is Mark Hinderleiter, host of Lessons in Leadership. Every Friday afternoon, I interview high-level leaders about leadership issues that matter most. As far as I know, it's the only show of its kind. Whether you're an executive, manager, teacher, coach, volunteer leader, or the head of a family, this show is for you. You'll get practical tips from real leaders on topics that can give you the competitive edge in the marketplace. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to Lessons in Leadership.
This is Shara Dalen. Join me for Women Inspiring Women every Wednesday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU. I'll be bringing my power tools, that is, power tools for women. Each week, I'll discuss who, what, when, where, and how to make it happen in your personal and professional life. So remember, join me, Shara Dalen, every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. as part of Women Inspiring Women on AM 920 WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Looking Black, the week in review, the week ahead, and differing perspectives with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back. I want to remind everybody before we get back to our guest journalist for this hour, tomorrow from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. at 1020 North Taylor, the International Urban Institute will be gathering to watch on this year anniversary of Katrina, When the Levees Broke, a documentary by Spike Lee. The time, again, is from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. It's a four-hour journey. Bring your Kleenex with you. It's something else. 7 o'clock to 11 o'clock, the International Urban Institute, Irene J. Smith and myself will be there to present this documentary to you. The address is 1020 North Taylor, and the building, of course, the Black Firefighters. Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality is allowing us to use their building every Saturday morning, and we thank them for joining with us on our issues and providing this space for us to get some of our work, our important work done. That's tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. Jared Ball, welcome back.
Yes, ma'am.
So, what else has caught your eye?
Well, first I just wanted to echo your sentiments about Spike's documentary. Is extremely powerful, so I'm wishing you well with your event, and I hope you get a great turnout because more people need to see that than I'm sure got to see it on HBO.
Or let alone sit down and watch all 4 hours of it.
Right, absolutely. And it won't feel like 4 hours, by the way.
No.
It's powerful. He did a good job.
Yes, he did. I'm proud of him.
Yeah.
I am proud of him. Documentaries, I like that. I like what you do with documentaries.
Yeah.
I like what you do with documentaries.
If only he had left Malcolm alone, I think
there
I would
go.
Have much more.
There
I
you
would
go.
Like, but
there,
anyway.
There you go. But maybe with age comes wisdom.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
There's one issue that I just wanted to share before we got out of here, which is something I'm sure most cities can appreciate. Earlier this summer, there was a white man involved in politics who was killed in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. And for any of your listeners not familiar with Georgetown, the once black part of the city used to house enslaved Africans has now become one of the wealthiest, whitest segments of the city that is even blocked from metro access to assure that poor people have a more difficult time getting over there. But nonetheless, a white man was stabbed to death in Georgetown earlier this summer by at least one black assailant, according to reports, who was under the age of 18. So the city's response, including statements by a local police official to the, saying something to the effect that this is what happens when black people, you know, come over to our area. This is how black people do.
Huh?
Oh yeah. I forgot the exact statement. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something to that effect. And the uproar of the residents, of course, saying, you know, we live in Georgetown. We're not supposed to have to deal with all of this. The city's response was to institute a curfew that I think just ended or maybe was extended slightly into the school year, a citywide curfew saying that young residents of the district under, I think, 17 years of age had to be inside by 10 o'clock, as if this would somehow have something to do with a decrease in criminal activity. But what it's really speaking to are the many issues confronting.
What isn't that the same statement that Bennett made?
More or less. The idea that if you abort black babies, you'll reduce the crime rate.
There you go. So if you take black babies off the street, then there you go.
Well, exactly. And of course, the concerns are deeper than that. You know. First of all, there had been a 2% decrease in violent crime committed by juveniles since last year. But the problem, of course, wasn't that the violent crime committed by black juveniles. It was in this case, the victim of the violent crime that raised the ire of the city. You cannot have white men in Georgetown being stabbed by black people and not have the city turn itself upside down. And, of course, whenever something like that happens, the most negatively impacted group are poor black citizens. So, or, as I would prefer to see it, colonized subjects as opposed to citizens. But the issues, of course, are, you know, not only the poverty and the racism, but how they impact the city, which leads to black people, particularly young black people, having very few places to go to keep themselves out of trouble, between a lack of jobs, between poor education, and, you know, no physical space to accommodate them. You know, we shut down go-go's. And again, if anybody's unfamiliar with D.C., go-go was the locally produced, you know, live band, organic entertainment, fascinating cultural expression, very African, by the way. But it's also blamed for violence and crime, so they've been shutting down go-go venues for years all around the city. So we're saying to our youth, we're not going to educate you, we're not going to provide you with jobs, and if you get in trouble, we are going to further punish you.
I just wanted to say publicly that
I was in support of, and I'm glad to hear that a local organization here called Empower DC recently was invited and organized young people to go to a Ward 5 town hall meeting where they challenged local officials to open the long-closed Alexander Crummell School and make it a recreation job training center for the underserved, mostly black poor population. I also think it's unfortunate that the school is named for one of the, you know, what some consider to be the founders of the United States wing of Pan-Africanism, Alexander Crummell, who helped found the American Negro Academy, out of which great minds such as W.E.B. Du Bois came.
Let me interject just for a second here. When Columbine occurred, and young white men, gangbangers, went in and killed young white students, they killed themselves, right?
Yep.
Did they have a curfew for young white kids?
Not to my knowledge, we should also remember that one of those victims was a black boy.
That is correct.
Killed
because he was black. Because he was black. So was there a curfew for all of the kids that looked like the Columbine gangbangers?
Well, I mean, that's exactly the point. They're not the problem, and white boys killing whites or black children is not nearly the same kind of problem as black youth.
It's not a collective problem.
Killing white men in Georgetown.
It's not a collective problem. They don't look upon an entire group of kids as criminal, but because one black person is accused of or did do one thing, then the entire group of people is impacted by this?
Precisely. But again...
That has to be the last word, Jared. I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I'll be back. Stay with me.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. It may not have been a hurricane, but Tropical Storm Ernesto has been the strongest storm so far this year. It roared onto the North Carolina coast last night, brought a lot of rain and maybe more wind than the forecasters had expected. ABC's Nancy Wiener has details from Wrightsville Beach.
Sporadic flooding has been reported in the Carolinas, but so far nothing too serious. 14 intersections underwater in Charleston, where they're used to flooding from storms like this. And here in North Carolina, where the streams and rivers were already swollen from a week of summer storms, they're keeping a close eye out for more flooding today. The National Guard has been activated here and is on alert in case evacuations are needed.
It's already raining in Washington, D.C. The worst of Ernesto is still to come. Authorities want to make sure they're covered. They've already declared a state of emergency, and the National Guard is on call. That's what it sounds like today on Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. Hurricane John spinning in the Pacific. It's a dangerous Category 3 storm. It could cause problems for Baja California, but it shouldn't be a threat to the rest of the U.S. This is Labor Day weekend. It's the last blast of summer, and that usually means one thing, road trip. Here's ABC's Jim Ryan.
This Labor Day weekend is providing motorists at least a little break on gas prices. Paula Miller is paying $2.45 for regular unleaded, at least while she can.
You think it's going to keep going down?
I hope so, but I doubt it. I figured it was going to be higher than this with this being a traveling holiday.
With her son sleeping in the back seat, she began the long drive to West Texas at night so she wouldn't have to use the air conditioner in hopes of improving her gas mileage, if only a little. Jim Ryan, ABC News, at a truck stop in Dallas.
AAA says 35 million of us will travel at least 50 miles from home this year. That's about 1% more than last year. More of us are working on this Labor Day. The government says employers added 128,000 jobs. At least 9 children have been taken to a hospital in Silver Spring, Maryland, after they were struck by a van at a school bus stop. Some of the children had serious injuries, none life-threatening. ABC News.
Top 3 reasons on house this Labor Day weekend. Number 3, are you kidding? It's like a 3-day home improvement fantasy camp. Number 2, doing it now means coasting in football season. And number 1, I'm not showing out a dime for anything.
2, goodbye electric guacamole, hello silent tide green. And the number 1 reason, I can save 25% at the Home Depot.
Now through Labor Day at the Home Depot, get 25% off number 1 rated Behr interior paint by manufacturer mail-in rebate. The Home Depot, you can do it, we can help. U.S. only, rated number 1 by a leading independent consumer publication. See store for details.
May I help you?
How much is this goldfish?
99 cents.
How's his temperament?
Huh?
Does he bite?
I don't think so.
Is he good with children?
Yeah,
Can he do any tricks?
Well, he wiggles pretty good.
What if everything in life came with a 115-point inspection? Well, before we certify any Ford Lincoln Mercury pre-owned vehicle, it must first pass a rigorous point-by-point exam. Plus, all Ford Lincoln Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles come with a 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty, including 24-hour roadside assistance.
Is he allergic to seafood?
Just shellfish!
See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Was a rockabilly singer who hit the top 20 in 1964 with Haunted House.
In a career lasting more than 50 years, Simmons would appear on Ed Sullivan and open for Elvis Presley. In 1994, he co-wrote Indian Outlaw, which was a big hit for country star Tim McGraw. Simmons died this week after a long illness in his hometown of Tupelo, Mississippi. Jumpin' Gene Simmons was 69. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
Andre Agassi's farewell tour continues after another big win, a five-set win last night at the U.S. Open over Marco Baghdatis. Next up, Benjamin Becker. By the way, Agassi, who is 36 years old and is dogged by back problems, says he'll retire after the tournament is over, after what's been a very long, storied career. I'm Darielle Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, a Normandy police officer killed at her Jefferson County home will be laid to rest today. 26-year-old Amanda Cates was shot to death Tuesday morning at her home in Crystal City. Her live-in boyfriend, Calverton Park Police Officer Robert Brooks, is charged with second-degree murder. Cates' funeral will be held this morning at Chapel Hill Mortuary in Cedar Hill. Memorial donations can be made to the Backstoppers. A teenage driver is charged as an adult in a crash that killed an Althoff High School student in May. 16-year-old Daniel Polites of O'Fallon, Illinois, is charged with aggravated drunken driving and reckless homicide in the death of 16-year-old Timothy Frazier. Authorities say Frazier was killed on May 27th when Polites crashed into an embankment off Illinois Route 163 in Millstadt. Patrols are being stepped up on Missouri roadways over the holiday weekend. Corporal Al Notham of the Missouri Highway Patrol says troopers will be on the lookout for drunk drivers, along with speed and seatbelt violators.
Out of the 1,200 people that die, approximately 1,200 people are killed in the state of Missouri every year. You know, a fourth of those people, we looked at the accident reports and we looked at the vehicles, and about a fourth of those people would have survived if they would have worn their seatbelt. So that's a lot of people when you think about it.
There were 12 deaths on Missouri roadways over the Labor Day weekend last year. Finally this hour, the state of Missouri is in desperate need of investments, according to a new report released yesterday by the Missouri Progressive Vote Coalition. Ron Berry of ProVote says the report shows that investments need to be made in education, health care, and the state's energy policy. The new Invest in Missouri's Future program seeks to provide affordable health care and education to everyone in the state and find ways to lessen dependence on foreign oil. This WGNU News report is brought to you by Advil Muscle Ache. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Chaser Plus. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44, there's an accident, left lane's blocked, and traffic's backed up through Sappington. Westbound 70 on the ramp, north and southbound, Lucas and Hunt, look for that incident, been cleared. Northbound 270 from Sappington to 44, it is stop and go. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake to Mason, look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 from Clayton Skinker to Hanley, look for slow traffic as well. Westbound 70 from Earth City Expressway through Blanchett Bridge, there's still some road work going on, and all your approaches on the Poplar Street Bridge. You can expect some delays coming into downtown, both on the Eads Bridge as well as the Poplar Street Bridge. And the King Bridge as well. And also northbound 109 at 100, there's a report of an accident. That's a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Chaser Plus. This Labor Day, use a designated driver to avoid accidents and to avoid hangovers. Take Chaser. Chaser absorbs toxins and helps you wake up feeling great. Buy Chaser products at Walgreens, CVS, and GNC stores. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday, for today, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly cloudy in the afternoon with isolated showers, high in the upper 70s. For this evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight, low around 60. Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a high around the mid-70s, and then Sunday, Mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny in the afternoon, high in the upper 70s. Currently we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 68 as well. Stay tuned now. It's time for the award-winning wake-up call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I say? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
Give it to you. You were born with power. Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can
you stand? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
seats. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget that the show is streamed at www.wgnu.net and also archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, go get an hour, and that's whiterosesociety.org. As many of you know, music is my life. I love music, and I am empowered every day with the history of the community of African descent. I attempt to bring that information to you every day. Well, today I'm going to combine both of my loves. I am going to combine music and people of African descent. We're going to have a discussion this morning of a new CD that is out, From Ear to Ear, The Passage of African Music Through American Slavery. It's African music, it's Caribbean music, and it is music of Africans in America as well. We're going to be having that discussion this morning with Larry Earle. He's the manager of African American Interpretation for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. He has also served as the Director of Education at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History in Detroit, and he is the Associate Director of the Reinterpretation at Historic Hudson Valley in Tarrytown, New York. Larry Earle, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. How are you, Ms. Round?
I am outstanding. How are you?
Fantastic.
I'm looking at this lovely CD from Ear to Ear, The Passage of African Music Through American Slavery. The Passage of African Music. Talk to us about that.
Well, we thought that it was a fitting title to talk about the passage because you, no matter how you look at it, those Africans who were brought to this new world, to, many of them under the chains of slavery, did not lose their identity once they arrived here in this new place. They brought with them language, religion, culture, music, food ways that in some ways were retained, some were sort of integrated and reinvigorated, but in many ways still distinctly African. So it's still the passage of African music through American slavery.
And when we take a look at the African component of this CD, I believe that was the first track that we were playing. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, that was called Cuckoo.
Cuckoo, yeah.
Cuckoo, the instrumental. When we look at that, when we examine... When we examine the African component of this, what are we going to discover as we look at the African influence in From Ear to Ear? Larry, can you hear me? No, we have lost our connection with Larry Earle. We will try to get him back. Why don't we take a break? And this is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. That's the problem with sometimes with modern technology. Doesn't want to do what it's supposed to do. We'll get our guest back, Larry Earle. The From Ear to Ear, the Passage of African Music Through American Enslavement. Stay with us. Is hospice care? Well, families turn to hospice care when facing the terminal illness of a loved one. The Point of Change Hospice provides an environment in which families can cope with the transition of their loved one in the supportive, loving, and comfortable setting of their own home. Through pain management, emotional counseling and support, and compassionate health care, the Point of Change Hospice treats the patient as a whole person facing end-of-life issues. Skilled hospice nursing, medical social services, occupational therapy, physical therapy, chaplain and counseling services, bereavement follow-up. Also physician-ordered services, medical equipment, medical supplies, medications for pain management, relief, and comfort. The Point of Change Hospice accepts Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance. Please give them a call. One of their counselors is waiting to talk to you. The Point of Change Hospice. 535-4500. That's 535-4500. The Point of Change Hospice. Caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays at 12 noon for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. I learned at an early age that animals matter to me. Every week we'll share your stories. We'll discuss issues that matter most to you and your companion animals, from breed-specific laws to puppy mills, and answer your questions about pet care as well. You'll also enjoy our special guests as they share their tales. It's an hour of fur, friends, and fun every week. Join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales every Friday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
Few gray hairs or wrinkles might bother some, but not me. When I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I wasn't sure I'd be around for my next birthday. But thanks to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's life-saving research, survival rates have increased dramatically. My cancer's in remission. If that means more gray hairs and wrinkles, I'll take them. To help, call 888-HELP-LLS or visit lls.org. I'm Kathleen Magby Brown, and with the help of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I'm relentless for a cure.
This is the Reverend E.L. Sims, the pastor of the Grace Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, located at 2601 Marcus. If you want to hear the true, unadulterated Word of God, I invite you to join me every Saturday morning God speaks in a mighty way, and he has a message of salvation that you can't afford to miss. So listen every Saturday morning for the Grace Tabernacle Radio Ministry at 9:30, right here on WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
My Sabini, he won't kill me. 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 My Sabini.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This morning we are talking to Larry Earle. We're talking about From Ear to Ear, the passage of African music through American enslavement. And our guest this morning is Larry Earle. He's the manager of the African American Interpretation for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. And Larry Earle, welcome back. I guess the hurricane is pounding you over there, or you're getting at least the residuals from it.
We're getting some of it here, so my apologies if we seem to fade in and out, but the wind is whipping and the rain is coming down, but we're delighted to be on your show. I am this morning.
Very good. As we look at this music that you've compiled in From Ear to Ear, talk to us about the African component. How did you come to choose what you have chosen, and what were you attempting to tell us with these selections?
Well, particularly with the African component, we wanted to focus on a region of the West African region, particularly where you find a great number of Africans who were brought to the Americas, originating from, particularly from places like Senegal and from Ghana and that region, Nigeria. So we wanted to find music that, in many sense, was very similar to the sounds you could hear in many of those countries that made connections. And so we wanted to choose instrumental songs that, because many people would tell you that the drum is a consistent in African culture and society. So we wanted to provide some music that, first of all, was a connecting link for many of the countries, but also accentuated the drum, which you find throughout African culture.
And when we look at the Kai Kai Cool, and let's play a little bit of that number six there. I think that's track number six, Joe. Let's play a little bit of this. And when we come back, I'd like for you to talk to us about what this song is saying and why it was included. Earl, that was Kai Kai Cool?
Actually, that was Yaya Dimpo.
Okay.
Yaya Dimpo. Yaya Dimpo is a fascinating song because it is actually a song that we find originates among the Jamaican Maroon communities. These were enslaved Africans who rebelled and who took to flight in the hills of Jamaica, and they maintained their own personal freedom and fought against enslavement and actually ended up signing a treaty with the British to maintain their free existence during the 18th century in Jamaica. And you can see why it has a very upbeat, fast Caribbean kind of feel. The words are uniquely African, and the tone and inflection of the song, the sort of improvisationalism of the soloist, represents that music, and it shows that there's a connection, there's a link. It isn't as distinctively as maybe perhaps a Wassaloo that you'll find on the CD, but it's very similar in how the soloist scats above and is improvisational in his rendition of the verse.
Well, let's do a comparison with that. The Wassaloo that you talked about, track number four. Track number four. That's in the African component of From Ear to Ear, the passage of African music through American enslavement.
What
You can really hear the difference in the clearly Caribbean versus the African.
Right, right. You see how the African music, it sounds as almost if he's behind the beat just a little bit.
Absolutely.
He comes in and it gets on it and comes back out. I mean, it's very unique that you can, and when you look at our modern musical forms, that you can see those African elements even today, whether you're talking about jazz or hip-hop or rock and roll or blues and soul.
And when we look at this, the African and the Caribbean and the American piece, and we're going to get to the American influence, in the words of them, are we seeing consistent messages or comparative messages that the songs are that the songs have?
Well, our next step is to work with the linguists to really get down to the mean and real roots of many of these songs that we've uncovered and researched, because we're still wrestling with what they're actually saying in many ways. But what we find that it's a mix. And we see that these people, though they as well as in Africa, as well as in enslavement, are not one-dimensional people. They're writing songs about humor. They're writing songs about relationships. The music speak about God, about aspirations, about family. So we find that consistent. We find that Alado Equiano, an African who purchased his own freedom and wrote his memoir, said that we are almost a nation of dancers, poets, and singers. For every great occurrence in life, even the most mundane, is celebrated through verse, music, and through praise.
So how did you come to find this music?
Well, it was, I tell you, a challenge. And I need to first and foremost give kudos to a very able intern that we had working on this project who's no longer with us. Her name is Priscilla Jewell. And Priscilla took the vision that we discussed about here, and we send her off.
Well, what was that vision?
That vision was to create a CD that was as authentic in its interpretation to the actual music that survived from the 18th century. We want to focus on that very early period. You'll find a lot of music exists from the 19th century, from the antebellum period, but it's very difficult many times for scholars to track those very early years. And we wanted to stay as close to that 18th century sound as possible. And so, you know, many of our, and we had a number of noted African and African American scholars working with us on this project, and many of them were a little concerned whether or not we were going to do it. But we did some fascinating things. I sent her to Yale University to their rare books library, and we thought we would have to go to Scotland to find this music. But fortunately enough, through some research, she found that Yale had some important music that had been written down called Congo a Jig, Negro, and Negro Dance. Yale didn't even know they had these very important original 18th century transcribed documents in their collection. So, you know, she blew off the dust and transcribed them and brought it back to us to put a part of this collection, this project.
Now, why did you think you had to go to Scotland?
Well, everywhere we looked, they said that we heard about this song, Negro Dance, but no one in the United States said that they had it. They only had maybe a 19th century version. And apparently there was a gentleman by the name of Ayers who had traveled here to America and who had heard this music that he heard among the Negroes, as he said, and he had transcribed it, took it back to Scotland, and published it. So the only surviving copy that we thought existed was in Scotland. But sure enough, we did some more research, and we found a copy in Yale, and there was a song stuck between the pages.
And when if you can just kind of give us a sense of what it takes to describe something like that.
Well, you know, for me, it was a great find. You know, it was a really fun, because here, which you many times the story of the African who was enslaved in America is somehow forgotten because many of those things were not written down and recorded. When you find something like that, and even granted that it was recorded by someone else looking in on
and interpreting,
mm-hmm. To me it still gives an insight because, as I said, as a historian, as a museum professional, we have to be able to look at the documents that and the artifacts that survived, and we have to be able to interpret them. Many folks might say that, for example, George Washington owned a teapot and a fine tea kettle. Well, actually, the enslaved woman named Caroline, who was the housemaid, spent more time with that teapot than George Washington did. So, essentially, it has more of a story to tell about her and how she handled it and what it meant to her than it does for George Washington. And we have to be able to interpret those stories that way.
So what do we learn about Africans in America, enslaved Africans in America, from this. And I want to bring the children into this.
Right.
So can we play a little bit of track number six, Joe? Bring a little bit of the children's African song into this. So where did this music come from?
Well, what you find is that that music is an old African tune from Ghana, particularly. And it is talking about the children. It's almost like Simon says, touch your head, touch your arm, touch your head. And it is one, we want to provide an example of that retention of culture. For these African people, they didn't just cast off and forget everything that they passed those things down to their children. And in the way that we do today, we teach our children through games, through stories, through patty cake. These Africans did the same thing here, although they were enslaved. And we want to make sure that we want to let people know that that was probably more exciting than anything else, that America is in its culture is inherently African. And that culture did not dissipate. It grew stronger and adapted.
And we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Larry Earle. He's the manager of African American Interpretation for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. He's also served as the director of education at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History in Detroit. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break. We will be back with more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 at WGNU. Time for a look at traffic brought to you on the half hour by Dollar Tree. The accident has been cleared on northbound 270 between Gravois and 44. Traffic getting back to normal there. Eastbound Highway 340 at Clarkson Olive, there's a disabled truck on the right shoulder. Northbound 270 between Sappington and 44. Traffic is starting to thin out there. Traffic getting back to normal on Highway 40 between Timberlake Manor and Mason Road. Traffic is moving well on Highway 40 between Clayton Skinker and Hanley. On westbound 70 between the Earth City Expressway and the Blanchett Bridge, the two left lanes are closed for road work. And MoDOT will have all lane closure reopened today by noon for the holiday weekend, except for 44 at the River de Pere. Road work and lane drops are scheduled to begin again today at 9 o'clock. This traffic report being brought to you by Dollar Tree. There's a new deals in town with a brand new look. They still have great $1 deals plus big deals that are too good to pass up. So they're passing them on to you. Come in for their grand reopening celebration on September the 1st. Now, taking a look at the WGNU weather forecast, cloudy this morning, then partly cloudy this afternoon, a few scattered showers, the high in the upper 70s, partly cloudy tonight with a low near 60. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy all day long with a high in the mid-70s, so it will be cooler. It's 68 degrees here at WGNU. The time is 8:32, and we'll get back to more of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown right after these important messages.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Oh, where else indeed are you going to get washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves? You're going to get them all at Sears, and you're going to get them right in your own neighborhood at Union and Natural Bridge. You know what? It's a holiday weekend. It's time to go take your time. Stroll through the full-service Sears, the only one in the city of St. Louis. Take your time. Look at the washers, the dryers, the high-end, amazing washers that practically go to your laundry room, pick the clothes up and clean them themselves. Get on down there. Jerome Williams will give you the customer service that you've never experienced anywhere else, and tell them that Liz Brown told you to.
Hi, this is Judy Moskov. Join me for a Gardener's Notebook every Monday at noon. We'll be talking with gardening experts, and sharing information that you need to know. Get the latest dirt on everything from tomatoes to trees. That's a Gardener's Notebook, every Monday at noon.
From A to Z, the Black Business Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs.
Oh.
OJ Photo Supply, a standard of quality service since 1970. 8338 Olive. Cameras, digital cameras, photo restorations. What's the best film for my camera? OJ Photo Supply can answer your questions. OJ Photo Supply, 8338 Olive, 991-5550. Don't forget, always check your decks.
Over 3,000 children in the St. Louis area need quality foster parenting and stable homes. Homes free of violence, abuse, and neglect. Homes complete with consistency and caring and strength. Foster families can provide the building blocks necessary in establishing positive patterns of behavior for children. Urban Behavioral Health Care Institute is looking for caring individuals interested in serving as a link to permanent family living. Call 314-577-5000 or visit urbanbehav.com. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Juba killed the yellow cat.
Juba killed the yellow cat.
Bend over double trouble, Juba.
Bend over double trouble, Juba.
Ah, Juba.
Ah, Juba.
We bake the bread.
We bake the bread.
And you give us the crust.
Welcome back. We are talking to Larry Earle. What the music that you just heard is From Ear to Ear. It is a compilation of fabulous music, African, Caribbean, and American music, and it describes the passage of African music through American enslavement. My guest this morning is Larry Earle. And Larry, welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And again, we were listening to the children, and it's always, you know, I've been to Ghana. It feels like I'm there. It is a very familiar thing. But when I was there, it felt like I was here as well.
Right.
So let's move to the American piece of this. Move to the American influence of this. Now, how do we decide? How do we determine what American influence is on African music, on Africans in America, enslaved Africans in America?
Well, the history is so unique because the Caribbean is such a distinctive sound, and primarily because when you look at the types of crops that were grown here in mainland North America, tobacco, wheat, corn, barley, and oats, cotton in a later time period, rice and indigo in the Sea Islands, you find that those crops are a little less labor-intensive than sugarcane that is grown in the Caribbean, where you have the average life expectancy of someone who is an African enslaved in the Caribbean being somewhere that if they survive between 10 to 15 years, that's a long life. You find that there are always a need to bring in fresh boatloads of Africans, as my grandmother would call them, saltwater Negroes from the continent. So you hear an accent in their voice. You hear that never really being cut off from the continent in a direct way. And then you listen to the American section, and you begin to see that the Africans who are enslaved here in the America, in North America, they begin to be able to sustain their population naturally. And they're able to form relationships. Masters begin to understand that if I allow these people to have relationships, then it'll be a much easier time. So they begin to form families. So the language changes. The things that they talk about change. And you can see that distinctiveness not only in the type of music, but also in how that music begins to sound.
And in terms of the family component of it and those who enslaved Africans, we don't want anybody out here to think that people that were enslaved here in Africa were really given any chance by anybody in any consistent way to form families.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true. I think it's very true. If anything, a good point to note that the masters understood that what they considered to be family was a mother and her children. But they understood that if you live you know, three plantations away, and I allowed you on Sunday to go and see your husband or your wife or someone. To them, that was a semblance of family.
Mm-hmm.
But
that didn't happen very often.
Well, you know, what's interestingly enough is that you find that slavery during the 18th century is a very particular and very peculiar institution. It's not like it was in the 19th century where everybody could own a slave. So you see, slavery goes from bad to worse, because you see, when the numbers increase and you find the territories to the west being opened up, such as the Alabama, Arkansas, St. Louis, and those areas, right, you begin to find that there's a different mentality and a different way in which the population is going to have to survive. They have to find a way to call out family through long distances. That's why in African American families, knowing who your relative is so important. You know, you go to that family reunion, they say, "That's your cousin,"
mm-hmm.
four times removed,
mm-hmm.
because that family, even in slavery, that although you may have been sold away to Alabama from Virginia, that link to them is very important to maintain.
So let's take a look, take a listen, if we can, to one of the American parts. Let's go to number 20, Joe. Can we do number 20? Can we do number 20? Right now we are listening to a CD, From Ear to Ear, The Passage of African Music Through American Enslavement. I'm talking to Larry Earle. We're listening to Trouble So Hard.
Oh, Lord,
trouble so hard,
don't nobody know my don't nobody know my
troubles but God.
Oh, Lord,
troubles so hard.
Oh, Lord,
troubles so hard.
Don't nobody.
So where did we get this song from? Where did it come from?
Trouble So Hard is one of those unique songs, and it's placed further down on the American portion of the CD, because it really is a song that shows how the transition from the secular to the sacred happens in the African American community, and how in many ways you really can't separate the two, in a sense that their religious understanding was not something they picked up and put down on Sunday. It was with them throughout the week. And so Trouble So Hard is an entry song. You hear that very slow, melancholy kind of beginning to that song. And in the African fashion, you begin to find that, well, don't nobody know my trouble but God, and I have a story to tell about that trouble. It begins to pick up. The pace begins to change. Because you see, although God is the only one who knows and can understand my trouble, he's the one who can save me and who can help me with that. So you find that the joy in that being expressed in the song as the song begins to move in its tempo.
Now when we look at these songs, again, Africans that were enslaved here in America, and we're listening to this American piece of it, where do you get the evidence of, or where did you find the archival history of these songs and their beginnings?
Many times where we have to find these songs are in the diaries and narratives of planters or people who visited the Americas during the 18th century, and they put down these lyrics. And some of these songs, like Trouble So Hard, is a song that was sung well into the 19th century. So what we did is we took the earliest recording from the 19th century, and then we backdated it. We tried to get at what the melody was and tried to get at what the tonalities and the pace was for the song, and use the primary resources and the secondary resources to get back to what might have been the true sense of the song. Because what we want to do in the song, we want these songs to evoke certain emotions in you. We want you to feel the music and to feel the words. So we want to put them in the context of as we felt, as close as we could get them to how they might have been heard on the streets, in the alleyways, on the plantations, or on the rivers.
Let's go to number 17. And let's go to number 17, Juba.
Ah,
Juba.
Juba.
Shake it, Juba.
Oh, come on, Juba.
couple of things about this particular song. First of all, Juba doesn't sound like an English word.
Not at all.
And but that this is in the American section. And what is this lead vocals by Larry Earl Jr.?
Well, you know, the great thing about being able to work on a project like this, you can be a part of the wonderful performers and educators who took part in this. So I am just delighted they gave me a chance to fit in there to sing Juba. But Juba is a fascinating song because Juba is an African name. And you find during the 18th century, you find in the runaway ads and in the inventories that that these enslaved Africans were still, despite being here in America, were still naming their children things like Juba and Quash and Nayani in the 18th century.
Mm.
They did not forget it from whence they came. And Juba is a song that really is a very playful song because Juba was also a dance. It was a dance that was done in very much the African tradition where the men, you'd make a circle, and a man and a woman would jump into the circle, and they'd sort of have a dance off. And you encourage everybody to come on in and Juba, and shake it, Juba, and it says, go on, says, come on, Phyllis, come on, Boatswan. And it really is a song that the folks would strike up a beat and it would be extemporaneous and it just has that repetitive verse and you'd add someone's name to them to get in the circle and dance.
And we're going to take a break. We are talking to Larry Earl Jr. He is talking about From Ear to Ear, The Passage of African Music Through American Enslavement. It's a CD, and we're going to talk about how you can get it and also some of the special features on it when you pop it into your computer. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with me. What is hospice care? Well, families turn to hospice care when facing the terminal illness of a loved one. The Point of Change Hospice provides an environment in which families can cope with the transition of their loved one in the supportive, loving, and comfortable setting of their home. Through pain management, emotional counseling and support, and compassionate health care, the Point of Change Hospice treats the patient as a whole person facing end-of-life issues. Skilled hospice nursing, occupational therapy, physical therapy, bereavement follow-up, trained hospice volunteers, and also physician-ordered services, medical equipment, medical supplies, medications for pain management, relief, and comfort. Point of Change accepts Medicare, Medicaid, and private health insurance. Money will not be an issue. One of their counselors, one of their skilled counselors, is waiting to comfort you and talk to you. Give them a call at 535-4500. That's 535-4500. The Point of Change Hospice, caring for families, caring for our community, and caring for you.
It's never too late to praise the Lord, and that's why you hear the broadcast from the Evangelist Center Church of God in Christ, Sunday nights at 10 on WGNU. It's a full hour of worship with Elder Leon Stewart and his congregation, a message that's timely and timeless. Tune in and hear for yourself. Elder Leon Stewart and the Evangelist Center Church of God in Christ, Sunday nights at 10 on AM 920 WGNU.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Austin. The Texas Department of Transportation is planning to build a toll road that's going to be an alternative to the planned Supermax Highway project. What makes this project so interesting is the fact that most of the project is to be contracted out to a company that's based in Spain. The road project is expected to be a 5-year plan to complete a 4-lane toll road between Dallas and San Antonio. Sintra Construction Corporation is paying the state $1.2 billion for the rights to build and operate that toll route. This new highway is expected to handle the growth of long-distance truck traffic that will result from trade agreements between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico by providing an alternate route to I-35 from San Antonio and North Austin. Sintra has also this year taken over the management of the Indiana Toll Road by paying $3.8 billion to that state. And it has also purchased the operating rights to the Chicago Skyway for nearly $2 billion. And Dateline Washington. The latest edition of the Armed Forces Journal says that American military leaders have embarked on a program to redraw the boundaries of the Middle East to conform to their view of how things should be. They rely on the concept of ethnic cleansing to create a peaceful region. One of the leaders of the study, Major Ralph Peters, says the U.S. needs to break up Iran to establish an independent Kurdish state, which would become the most pro-Western state between Bulgaria and Japan. Jordan would be expanded into some of the area now occupied by Saudi Arabia, and Iran would give up much territory to several new states that would be pro-democracy. This is your wake-up call Global News Update. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
This is Mark Hinderleiter, host of Lessons in Leadership. Every Friday afternoon, I interview high-level leaders about leadership issues that matter most. As far as I know, it's the only show of its kind. Whether you're an executive, manager, teacher, coach, volunteer leader, or the head of a family, this show is for you. You'll get practical tips from real leaders on topics that can give you the competitive edge in the marketplace. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to Lessons in Leadership.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I'm going to beat this cone. Uh-huh. I'm going to beat them good. Uh-huh. I'm going to beat them so. Uh-huh. I'm going to beat them till the husk come off. When I get through.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking with Larry Earl this morning. He is the manager of African American Interpretation for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. He has also served as the Director of Education at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History in Detroit and as Associate Director of the Reinterpretation at Historic Hudson Valley in Tarrytown, New York. Larry, welcome back.
Thanks again.
As we continue our conversation about this CD from ear to ear, first of all, where can people get it?
You can go to our website, and that's colonialwilliamsburg.com, www.colonialwilliamsburg.com, and go into our marketplace section, and you can log online to get it. It's right now sold through Colonial Williamsburg stores.
And talk to us about what happens when we put the CD in our computer. What happens?
Well, we are definitely want to provide a CD of not only good music, but we want to provide a CD that presented to you the history and gave you some. So the first thing, it's interactive. It's an interactive CD. It features one of the African instruments that many people don't identify with an African instrument, the precursor to the xylophone, something called the balafone. And from that launching stage of the balafone, you can actually play the notes on the African instrument, the balafone. You can click and you can discover original 18th century images of African music instruments, of African people in various settings. You can learn a little bit about the institution of slavery. You can learn, we have the lyrics to the songs there. We have essays from three very, very great scholars consultants on this process. There's just so much you can see there. Interviews with me and Dr. Ellis, who began the African American program at Colonial Williamsburg. Just so much to experience.
So what we're listening to right now, is that the instrument that you're talking
about?
That is
the balafone, the precursor to the xylophone.
And that's number two on the From Ear to Ear piece. One of the things that I really find very interesting is the artwork that you have included in this. Talk to us about where some of this came from.
Well, those images that you'll find on the CD come from multiple institutions around the country. It's interesting that a lot of the larger universities and colleges have some fascinating collections on African-American life, and we just have to be able to access those and provide folks where they are. We have images from John Carter Brown Library at Brown University. We have images from the Maryland Historical Society, from Yale University, from University of Virginia. They come from various artists and sketchbooks from the 18th century, and we thought that it would be great to show that these very regal and majestic people maintain their dignity and even help to shape this very nation through the simplest things. Not only do we talk about their labor, but through the music we enjoy, the language, the foods we eat. These people, these Africans, have indelibly made its impact and shaped American society and culture.
What was the most surprising thing that you discovered in your archival digs and attempts to put together? Are you still there? Ladies and gentlemen, the challenge that we're having right now is Hurricane Ernesto. We are having problems with the impact and the impact of that, so that's the problem that we've had, and we've lost our guest Larry Earle as a result of that. I'm sorry for that, but let's, you know what, I want to let people hear some of this. So how about, let me just play a little bit more of this while we attempt to try and get him back. Have we gotten him back yet? Okay, let's try listening to, let's go back to number three, Joe. This is from Ear to Ear. It is a enhanced CD. That means it's an interactive CD pertaining to the passage of African music through American enslavement, African, Caribbean, and American music. And you're listening to one track on it. It is called, it's track number three called Wasulu. 1-877-920-WGNU. And I'd like to take this time to also remind you that tomorrow we will be having our meeting with the International Urban Institute. We will gather to together to watch Spike Lee's When the Levee Broke documentary. You'll be able to join us tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. at 1020 North Taylor. You don't want to miss this broadcasting of Spike Lee's documentary When the Levees Broke. Irene J. Smith and myself and the International Urban Institute will be bringing that to you. We're going to take a few more minutes with our guest, Larry Earle. Larry, welcome back. Boy, that storm is something else.
I tell you, we just had a big surge. I said, there's the power.
There goes the power. Well, and let me get to this quickly. What was the most amazing and surprising thing that you discovered as you were digging through the archival information and putting this this CD together?
You know, the most surprising thing to me was that if you look, there was a great deal available. And one of the fascinating pieces that you can see on that CD is there's an image that we scanned in of an original song called Massa By Me. I think you played it earlier.
Yes, I did.
But that was transcribed by, again, a white visitor to the island of Barbados. And it's interesting how he got the notes, and he tried to get the words as right as he possibly could. Fortunately, we had someone from Barbados on our staff who could help us out. But to me, it was just so fascinating. Because this was a song that he thought interesting enough to write down, and if he had not, it might have been lost. But what I thought was interesting about the men who were doing it, that to them it was a great parody. They were saying, although I may be enslaved, master buy me, but he won't kill me. He won't kill me. And I think it was a testament to their fact that they knew how to survive, that they knew how to maintain and how to overcome and how to maneuver within enslavement so that they could maintain for themselves and for their progenitors.
And also an indictment on the enslavers.
Yes, indeed.
An indictment on the enslavers. And again, where can people get this?
You can get this at www.colonialwilliamsburg.com, at our website, and visit on our marketplace. It's for sale through the Internet.
Very good. Larry Earle, thank you so much for joining me this morning. This has been wonderful.
Liz, thank you so much. I was just in St. Louis last weekend at the African American Association Museums, and we had a great time there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. We have one more good hour coming at you. Why don't you stay with us? We'll be back.
Don't nobody know my
troubles but God.
Oh, Lord.
Troubles so hard.
Oh, Lord.
Troubles so hard.
Don't nobody know my
troubles but God.
Don't nobody know my heal the other day, so God happy and said all day, oh Lord, oh Lord, don't nobody know my, don't nobody know my.
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Forecasters are not getting much of a break this long holiday weekend. They're watching two systems, one on each coast. Hurricane John is spinning in the Pacific. Not far from Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, the Category 3 storm could also cause problems for Baja California. Here's ABC's Alex Stone.
The Mexican government issued a mandatory evacuation order affecting some 15,000 people around Cabo San Lucas, many of them tourists who were in Mexico on vacation. Shelters are now open at 131 schools around Baja California. With the approaching storm, lines at airports and gas stations have been unusually long.
As for Tropical Storm Ernesto, it's moved over inland, over North Carolina, and into Virginia, where it could be a soggy start to the Labor Day weekend.
Rainfall amounts are expected to be heaviest over the next 24 hours, 8 to 12 inches of rain from Norfolk to Washington, D.C., and as it moves further north, rainfall amounts will still be heavy, 4 to 8 inches from places like southern New Jersey and Pennsylvania. By Sunday, the Northeast will get some rain, but Ernesto weakens. Expect 2 to 4 inches into New England, Boston, upstate New York as well on Saturday.
That's ABC News weather correspondent Mike Bars. You'll have a lot of company if you're hitting the road this weekend. The AAA says 35 million Americans will travel at least 50 miles from home. It might be because we're getting a little break in the price of gas.
You're paying like $3 a gallon, boy, that eats you up. It eats you up, man. That's $2.45, that's a good price.
He's at a truck stop near Dallas. 10 children are hospitalized this morning. They were standing at a school bus stop in Silver Spring, Maryland, when a van slammed into them. The kids range in age from 10 to 14. Some of the injuries may be serious, but a spokesman for the police department says probably not life-threatening. More of us are working this Labor Day. Employers added 128,000 jobs in August, bringing unemployment down to 4.7%. This is ABC News.
Top three reasons I'm getting stuff done around the house this Labor Day weekend. Number three, are you kidding? It's like a three-day home improvement fantasy camp. Number two, doing it now means coasting in football season. And number one, I'm not showing out a dime for any of it right now.
At the Home Depot, get special deferred financing on purchases store-wide with your Home Depot consumer credit card. Right now at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Offer valid through September 4th in U.S. only. See store for details.
May I help you?
How much is this goldfish?
99 cents.
How's his temperament?
Huh?
Does he bite?
I don't think so.
Is he good with children?
Yeah,
I mean... Can he do any tricks?
Well, he wiggles pretty good.
What if everything in life came with a 115-point inspection? Well, before we certify any Ford Lincoln Mercury pre-owned vehicle, it must first pass a rigorous point-by-point exam. Plus, all Ford Lincoln Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles come with a 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty. including 24-hour roadside assistance.
Is he allergic to seafood?
Just shellfish.
See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
ABC News is marking the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks with a special series called Remembering 9/11. Today, national correspondent Jim Hickey introduces us to a woman who lost her husband in the attacks but turned her grief into something positive.
You'd think Ellen Saracini would be angry.
I really try hard not to do anger. I think it's a waste of time.
Her husband, Victor, was the pilot of one of the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center on 9/11.
My whole world turns upside down.
Instead of anger, she focused on raising money to build a memorial garden in her Pennsylvania township in memory of all the 9/11 victims.
It was very healing to be able to direct my energies into something that was positive.
The $1.4 million memorial is scheduled to open at the end of September.
So what the kids
Jim Hickey, ABC News, Lower Makefield Township, Pennsylvania.
It's the ninth anniversary of Princess Diana's death. Many admirers will visit her former home, Kensington Palace, today. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
The local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, the St. Louis Public Schools accreditation will be determined this fall, and the district's latest test scores aren't a good sign. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, only 9 city schools met their adequate yearly progress goals on last year's MAP tests. The St. Louis Public Schools are currently provisionally accredited. State Education Commissioner Kent King assembled a special committee in July to review the district. An attorney who represented the Metropolitan Sewer District in 1999 and 2000 will go to prison for nearly 4 years. Charles Polk was sentenced yesterday to 46 months in prison for tax evasion and interstate transportation of stolen property. Prosecutors say Polk fraudulently obtained money from clients and associates and hid those activities from his law firms. MSD officials say they have policies and procedures in place to keep this type of activity from happening again. It's going to be more difficult to light up outside hospitals in Missouri. Hospitals across the state are voluntarily implementing tobacco restrictions on their campuses beginning today. Dave Dillon, a spokesperson for the Missouri Hospital Association, explains.
Each hospital will have to come up with a policy of how they're going to implement that regulation. That means that most likely you will not see, for example, a smoking hut outside a hospital anymore. And it, in many cases, will probably include parking lots and adjacent type of structures.
State regulations enforcing smoking restrictions on hospital campuses will take effect in July. St. John's Mercy Medical Center is one hospital that, effective today, no longer allows smoking anywhere on the hospital campus. Smoking inside Missouri hospitals was banned more than a decade ago. Finally this hour, hundreds of riders are lining up for the Bill McEntee Memorial Bike Ramble. The ride will benefit the Backstoppers and the family of slain Kirkwood Police Sergeant Bill McEntee. The ramble is set for 6:30 tomorrow morning at the Kirkwood Community Center. Registrations will be accepted until start time. More information is available at the City of Kirkwood website or by calling 314-965-8404. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Preparation H. Preparation H cream relieves burning, itching, and also gives you maximum strength pain relief on contact. It's the most complete Preparation H relief ever. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
And WGNU News time is now 9:07. Time for a look at traffic on the 9 o'clock hour, brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Southbound Guyer Road at Big Bend and northbound Guyer Road at Watson closed by police for crews to work on a fallen tree there. The northbound, the right lane on northbound Highway K between 40 and O'Fallon Road is closed for shoulder work. South Broadway between Ohio and Mount Pleasant, there is an injury accident reported. northbound Highway 141 on the ramp to southbound Highway 21, an accident reported there. An overturned vehicle reported on Highway NN at Autumn Drive. Construction has one lane closed on Highway 67 between Route CC and Highway 110. Also, MoDOT will have all lane closures reopened today by noon for the holiday weekend, except on I-44 at the River De Pere. Road work and lane drops are scheduled to start again at 9 o'clock on Tuesday. This traffic report brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Watch for Green Ball Double Draw. One green ball, two chances to win. Illinois Lottery, have a ball, play responsibly. The WGNU forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies this morning with some scattered showers throughout the day, the high in the upper 70s. Partly cloudy tonight, the low near 60, and tomorrow cloudy with a high in the mid-70s. Right now, it is 72 degrees here at WGNU. WGNU news time is now 9:09. Stay tuned for another hour of the morning wake-up call with Liz Brown and a couple of special guests to talk about the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I say? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. Going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can this
stand? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much to talk about. Get to me. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609. And I want to remind everybody before we get to our guest for this hour, tomorrow from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m., we are going to be showing the International Urban Institute, Irene J. Smith and myself, after the levees broke. Spike Lee's documentary, 4 hours. And the 4 hours are four separate hours assessing what happened when the levees broke. It's a powerful piece, and it's the reason why the International Urban Institute is doing this is because we need to bring the information to our community. And this is a very empowering way to do it. And there are many lessons to be learned and many actions to be taken. And I know many of you out there don't have the opportunity to have HBO or let alone sit down and be able to watch all 4 hours of it and then have a group discussion. We had over 200 people at our last showing, film showing. I expect to have twice as many this time. So please come on out to 1020 North Taylor. That's the Firefighters Institute for Racial Equality, the Black Firefighters Organization. The address is 1020 North Taylor, tomorrow morning from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. Well, it's the anniversary when the levees broke, Katrina. And we need to talk about After the Storm. There is a book that has been written, After the Storm. And we have the editor of the book and a contributor to the book on the show with me this morning to talk about that. John White, good morning.
Morning.
And David Trout, good morning.
Good morning.
David, let's start with you. After the storm, what pushed you to compile these observations?
Well, I think my rage was ignited initially by what we saw on television. And, my interest continued as I watched the coverage of the storm and the aftermath and the incompetent rescue and the chaotic dispersal and all the trauma that just continued for weeks and weeks in those people's lives. And as the nation tried to grapple with it, we kept hearing that there would be this difficult but important conversation that the nation would have over issues of race and class. And I was concerned that as time passed, mainstream sources would shy away from that promised debate and that Katrina was just far too critical a historical event for Black Americans and for all Americans. So I wanted to rely on that old instinct for critique, observation, and prescription that has always been a part of the African-American experience, and to draw on Black scholars to offer their commentary as quickly as possible so that we could get it out and make sure that even if it was imperfect, we were at least contributing to the debate so that a lot of issues wouldn't be missed.
And when we talk about this critical historical event, I think critical is a great word because it describes importance, but it also describes how the assessments were made in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. When you gathered your contributors together, were you looking for any particular assessment? Were you looking for any kind of particular voice? How did you make the decision of who you were going to put into your book After the Storm?
Yeah, it's a great question because I've never been an editor before. And I didn't want to confuse my own feelings with what contributors should contribute specifically. But I did think that this was a historically significant storm and that natural disasters probably play an important role in the lives of African Americans and have since we've been here. And sure enough, we have two contributors in the collection who are able to talk about those dimensions, which a lot of people may not know about. I wanted to make sure we had a legal dimension because there are a lot of people who are concerned with, well, what rights do people have? What remedies might they have for the harm they suffered? So we have several that look at that. I wanted to make sure that there were Black political perspectives because I was afraid some of those things might be lost. And I also wanted to make sure that we addressed issues of faith and issues of community, which again I didn't think might be covered as broadly in the mainstream report. So I tried to find people who could write to those kinds of issues, and they just went on their own. It's a terrific book.
And we're going to come back and continue our conversation about the book After the Storm. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
Praise the Lord, everyone. This is the Elder Mitchell Thornton of the All Request Sweet Sounds of Music. We bring you the best gospel sounds in St. Louis, as well as the up-to-date church news to help you plan your weekend worship every Saturday morning from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. right here on WGNU 920 on your radio dial.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
What critters live on the forest floor? Find out on Thursday, August 31st from 10 to 11:30 a.m. We'll sift through leaves and search the nooks and crannies of fallen logs. Learn what these insects eat and how they survive. For more information, call 314-877-6014. Something for you from Radio Free St. Louis.
There's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming, this one's coming.
Whoever was in charge of planning was so detached from the realities of inner city life in a place like New Orleans that they couldn't conceive of the notion that somebody couldn't load up their SUV, put $100 worth of gas in there, put some sparkling water, and drive off to a hotel and check in with a credit card.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. We are discussing the book After the Storm and the one-year anniversary of the Hurricane Katrina. And our guest this morning is the editor, one person is the editor of the book, David Trout. David, welcome back. And John White, a contributor for the book After the Storm. And David, I want to continue with you just for a moment here. We just heard one of the commentaries that played a year ago, talking about the disconnect between those that were viewing what was happening, those that were supposed to be addressing what was happening and what the reality on the floor, on the ground was. When you put together your, when you compiled your writers for this book, did they all have the same sense? I mean, I know that you dealt with the legal and the political and the faith issues, but did they all seem to have this kind of foundational understanding that there was a huge disconnect?
Sure. I mean, I think that's run pretty consistently throughout a lot of the critical analysis, and certainly the analysis coming from black, you know, intellectual quarters. I mean, the disconnect can be described in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of incompetence, a lot of problems with the way government functions in these things. But one of the things that one of the themes that comes through a lot of the pieces, which is evident of the whole situation, is just what a profound element fear is in terms of that disconnect. And what I mean by that is that there were several phases of disaster for most of these victims, and at least three of them were man-made. The first phase was the structural vulnerability that put poor black people in a position in New Orleans to be disproportionately affected, and that happened over decades. The second was the storm itself. That we leave to God. The third was the dismal response by local, state, and federal, but especially federal authorities, who just could not get their act together and seemed to believe that it was okay that these people languish for this period of time. A lot of that languishing, though, seems now to have been influenced by tremendous fear, a willingness to believe the false reports of criminality, and willingness to act on those false reports and to treat people like criminals in the response. And then finally, you see a sense of fear in the chaotic dispersal of so many, again, black, poor folks who were at the Superdome and the Convention Center. They were not treated the way we ordinarily treat people in those situations, whether or not you call them refugees. They were treated as people to be feared, people to be watched. And this is central to the disconnect and central to what we have to repair.
But, and John, let me let you jump in on this, because that's a fascinating assessment, David. But it's at the root of it, it's race. I mean, the fear is born out of racism, isn't it?
I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think most of the contributors agree with that proposition and use it as their starting point. In my own essay, the fear of evacuees coming to Baton Rouge begins immediately to hamper the rebuilding process, in part because around the state and around the region, people start to say, I don't really want, I don't want little villages around here because the fear of the residents who are going to be there. And that fear is surely racialized and rooted in, our long history of racial discrimination and demonization of black folks.
And we have scenes from 50, 60, 70 years ago of white cops with clubs saying, don't let the sun set on you. I mean, basically, when we had black people stranded on that bridge with sheriffs saying, you can't come into my town.
Mm-hmm. That's a severe problem, and it's emblematic of a kind of hysteria that took over in the region. I mean, obviously, the people who evacuated from New Orleans, you couldn't really get back into the city. But here in Baton Rouge during that time, there was a great amount of hysteria. And the Gretna Bridge incident was a part of that. It was this notion that these people are not, it's sort of a position that is not accustomed to American life, right? We live under freedom of travel, and we're accustomed, at least traditionally, to this ideal that you can go where you want. And the major exception to that historically has been these sundown towns that you mentioned. And so we definitely have a connection to that tradition in that context.
George W. Bush brought some generators to New Orleans and stood out in the square with the only electricity on and spoke to the nation, and he mentioned the R word. He mentioned race in his discussion, and he said that he was that this is something that needed to be addressed. And do either one of you, David or John, do you believe that this country has taken a look at the issue of race in any kind of real way since Katrina?
Well, no, not really. I think this is one of those periodic events that we've come to experience since the end of Jim Crow, where, every 5 to 10 years there's some gigantic event and it forces us to say momentarily, finally we're going to have some sort of conversation about race, and we're going to deal with concentrated poverty that is racialized. And these events have tended to follow the same pattern. We talk about it in that way. It elevates to sort of a broad, symbolic, even metaphorical discussion. But it's, I think, that elevation to sort of vagaries that undercuts it. We are troubled by having conversations about the particulars of concentrated urban poverty that is largely, if not exclusively, black and today Hispanic.
And John, talk to us about your essay.
Okay.
What was the passion behind the story that you wrote?
Well, I think the two levels. The first is, I was here in Baton Rouge during the storm and after, and the kind of vibe that was in the air initially was one of kind of disaster and despair, but it very quickly turned uncomfortable because the very widespread references about crime and criminality, particularly when they began to be spread with no evidence whatsoever here in Baton Rouge that there was supposedly sort of riots and attacks by evacuees, and then the talk about what New Orleans might be able to be, the so-called new New Orleans, all of these conversations were disturbing precisely because they were tainted by old-fashioned kind of racial innuendo. And I think my own essay is about the dilemma that that situation raised here in the whole country. I think on the one hand you had this sort of contrast between Mayor Nagin, for example, as a strong black leader, particularly when he made his no more, press conferences white insensitivity to the plight of black Americans. And partly that dichotomy is so abstracted that it's not really useful, because it obscures the fact that Ray Nagin essentially was elected as the candidate of a particular coalition in New Orleans that meant that he wasn't initially aimed at helping poor black New Orleanians, and he didn't do very much for them. Here in Baton Rouge, you had a similarly elected black mayor who himself started these rumors by making a very widely distributed statement that he didn't want any more New Orleans thugs coming to Baton Rouge. And for the last year, he's made similar statements about Baton Rouge not being an evacuation place in the future. And so I was animated by that, which I found to be kind of a problematic mix, and especially the way in which those kinds of subterranean racial opinions and the particular racial politics has undercut redevelopment efforts. There's very few housing options for people who wish to return to New Orleans and to work in rebuilding the city. And so poor and working class people have very few options to move back to the city. And that has severely hampered rebuilding.
1-877-920 is our phone number. I am talking this morning to John White, a contributor for the book After the Storm, and David Trout, the editor of After the Storm. This is the one-year anniversary of Katrina. And we're going to have more of our conversation when we come back. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else, where else indeed. Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace. You need to get on down to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. That's right, Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. You can get your shop on. You can get all kinds of things. Washers, dryers, tools, tractors. How about a leaf mulcher? How about a generator? Get on down to Sears and get your shop on. And when you get there, tell them that I told you to.
The sweet sounds of music
and glorious songs of inspiration broadcast
has been a Sunday morning tradition in St. Louis
for over 30 years. We bring you the best loved songs on the gospel scene.
Plus late-breaking church news,
words of inspiration,
and, well, just a whole lot of fun.
Join me, Evangelist Stellan Arie.
And me, Brother Mel St. Clair, Sunday mornings from 9:30 a.m. until 11 o'clock a.m.
Here on your weekend gospel voice of choice, AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
B.F. Goodrich Tires have won all over the world. Here's how you say victory in Portuguese. B.F. Goodrich Tires. Español, B.F. Goodrich Tires. Valuable insight from the tire that's won 20 straight Score Baja 1000s. And more rock crawling championships than all other tires combined.
Visit any auto tire, the Tire Pros, from August 7th to September 3rd and receive an instant $50 off custom wheels, accessories, warranties, and services when you buy four new select B.F. Goodrich light truck or SUV tires. See store for details.
Around the world, around the and, world behind, the and story. Behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
And they don't have a clue what's going on down here. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of Excuse my French, everybody in America, but I am pissed. I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man.
Welcome back. Made me want to holler. This is Liz Brown. This morning, this hour, we are talking to David Trout. He's the editor of the book After the Storm, and John White, a contributor to After the Storm. And David, I'd like to come back to you. One of the things that the observations that you first made when you came on was that our nation was trying to grapple with the issue of all of the issues that were raised by Katrina and the aftermath of Katrina. Now that you've put this book together, a year later, do you see, what do you see that has changed?
Well, not a lot.
Are you surprised by that?
Not surprised by it, because where we expected the biggest bang for our buck would be if the same public officials who so failed the people of New Orleans when the storm struck and in the immediate several weeks afterwards, if those same people could provide the sort of leadership on these issues in terms of not just having the discussion, but actually trying to propose policy change that would remedy the problems, then we wouldn't see this kind of situation arise every 5 or 6 years. Well, what's happening, I think, instead, and this is probably the real story, is that because what happened in New Orleans and across the Gulf Coast was so profound in terms of the lives that it affected, the amount of property damage, et cetera, and because New Orleanians have been dispersed in so many places around the country at a local level, if you want to say the grassroots, if you just want to say that at a community level, many more of these discussions are taking place with a sort of an action orientation, because people have to, because that's where people are. So I'm sorry, pardon me, I'm sorry that the people we count on to really move the debate, the issues toward better outcomes have been so silent, but I take some faith in the fact that at the local level in communities, especially across the South, you do see people grappling with some of these issues.
And John, one of the things that was the, at least people that I know, and people that I talked to, during the aftermath of Katrina, was how the story was told. And one of the compelling pieces of evidence, if you will, for how the story was told based upon, race, was the one, and I know that every black person I know, I think, received this email of the two photographs, and you know which photographs I'm talking about, of the people in the water.
Yeah.
And describe those photographs and their captions to our audience, and tell me if you think that whether people outside of the community of African descent got that.
Outside of it, well, I'm not sure. I think that there's a great resistance to accepting any kind of evidence that there's racial difference in treatment of people.
And tell the audience what caption, what we're talking about.
We're talking about the two photographs, one with a young black man with a bag wading through the water, described as a looter, and another with two white evacuees wading through the water with each with bags, described as having found supplies. And that juxtaposition of those two pictures created much debate and much discussion. In this collection, there's an excellent essay by Cheryl Harris and Devin Cavado that engages that debate and follows up on, you know, sort of the origins of the captions. And one of the things that happened is, of course, that the discussion with the photographers provided the kind of facially neutral explanation for how the captions emerged that I think has permitted a lot of outside observers, lots of people who are resistant to racial explanations, to say, look, it wasn't race, there you go. But their essay shows that the power of the imagery and our acceptability of that framework is one that was much more deep-rooted than whatever the particular captions origins might have been. And I think that they're very compelling in highlighting not just how those particular photographs, but the whole event surrounding Katrina suffered because of our, as a community, the national community's susceptibility to dismissing the kind of racial dimension of the crisis.
And David, prior to Katrina, I was noticing and tracking a disturbing trend in the community of African descent, what appeared to be pursuit of faith-based money and relationships with this administration, and in attempts to, it appeared to be to obtain some of the money that had heretofore not been available to churches. And it seems that this Katrina piece caused the faith-based community within the community of African descent to really have to reevaluate their relationship with this administration, because the covers were pulled for them, it appeared, in a way that was inescapable. Did you get the sense of that?
I've gotten a little sense of that, and I must confess that's just not something I've looked at that hard, so I really don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if a wake-up call were due, because, you know, meaning changed in the aftermath of Katrina, or at least relationships. The true nature of relationships were revealed, you know, more starkly after Katrina. But I do want to go back to something that was mentioned earlier, just about the loot or find and the characterizations of black people and criminality, because, you know, there's one interesting thing to note here about this pathology of perceiving black people as, you know, in situations like this, as a undifferentiated horde of people prone to criminal behavior and antisocial conduct. You know, it is so profound in this country that it is not just a question of what outsiders perceive. I mean, we really have to be fair, and we have to be straight about the record. And many of the reports of black criminality coming out of New Orleans were coming out of black elected officials, or black officials like Chief, I believe he's Chief Compass. So a lot of the claims that people on rooftops sweltering in all that heat, trying desperately to survive, were actually shooting at their rescuers, you know, were not just the work of CNN or mainstream news organizations and white reporters who may not understand things. No, a lot of that was coming out of the police force, out of the mayor's office, and then, as John suggested, also out of the mayor of Baton Rouge. And the problem when we recognize that it's not just non-black people who have these misperceptions of black people, is that it becomes that much more difficult to change them. As we saw in Katrina, those perceptions literally kill people.
When we hear things like that, when we hear the idea, the story of somebody trying to shoot a helicopter down, shouldn't somebody at least be raising the question of why on earth would somebody be trying to do that? There just seems to be such an ease of acceptance that, yeah, this is what would happen.
Well, that's the unconscious racism, I mean, even as held by black people, that you would accept those reports, which were probably rumors. I'm not suggesting that Compass made it up himself. He probably felt like the sources were his own and they were credible. But it is such an incredible story, and it just makes no sense unless you carry some deep-seated beliefs that people like this are capable of
doing that
behavior like that.
Strange criminal behavior,
right,
like
right.
that.
Right, but remember, it was a whole lot of things. I mean, it almost went as far as bestiality, the descriptions of what was going on in the Superdome. And I'd actually like to take this moment, because I'm not sure how often we get to do it, and just stop to praise and admire the thousands of people who endured just the worst, most inhumane circumstances and kept their cool and looked after each other and did not engage in all of those remarkable-sounding behaviors, because many of us, after 4 or 5 days in the Superdome, might have been driven to all manner of behavior. They were not.
And you're certainly right. That is certainly not an observation that is often made, and because, you know, I can't imagine myself in a circumstance like that. I can't. I absolutely can't.
It's just horrible. You lose all bearings.
And when could you elaborate on the bestiality observation that you made?
Well, just that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Just the sense that these are the things we know about black people. And although, you know, the adjective poor is not in there, it's implied that they will rape each other at will because of this sort of wanton lasciviousness, that they will, that there will be acts of incest, there will be rapes against babies, there will be every man. I mean, this stuff read out of a lot of these reports. I mean, it may sound shocking to say, but they're right there. They're consistent with sort of Ku Klux Klan literature you would read in the 20s in terms of the typical behavior of black people. And so in all of these, we see black people dehumanized. And the effect of that dehumanization, of course, is to make it easier to ignore their pain and to see them as different from ourselves. But that's what I'm getting at there, that we really have to stop and realize that we have not seen in contemporary times open, repeated characterizations of black people in this way. This is scary stuff, and this is why it's so important that we stay with these issues, as difficult as they may be.
And we're going to take a break here. 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We will be back with my guest, the editor of After the Storm and a contributor to After the Storm, John White and David Trout. Stay with us.
I'm painting the bedroom this Labor Day weekend. Number 3, the color in there now so loud I can't even sleep. Number 2, goodbye electric guacamole, hello silent tide green. And the number 1 reason, I can save 25% at the Home Depot.
Now through Labor Day at the Home Depot, get 25% off number 1 rated Behr interior paint by manufacturer mail-in rebate. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. Rated number 1 by a leading independent consumer publication. See store for details.
Aquí está lo que estabas esperando, la nueva Radio Mix. Sintonízanos todos los domingos de 6 a 8 de la noche a partir del 3 de septiembre por WGNU 920 AM. Entrevistas, eventos y la mejor música para ti. Radio Mix, la nueva de San Luis.
This is Sergeant Gary Wiggard. Don't touch that dial. Step away from the radio. Why? Because I'm next.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
Lack of urgency prior to 9/11. I think that lack of urgency is still present today. There's no sense of crisis. There is a kind of a sense of business as usual. I did not think we were prepared for a major catastrophe. I don't think we are today. I think if you had a nuclear attack or a biological attack, we would have chaos.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour we are discussing the book After the Storm, and a compilation of commentary about After the Storm. What storm? Of course, Katrina. Our guests are David Trout, the editor of After the Storm, and John White, a contributor to After the Storm. And David, I know you have to go in a few minutes, so I just wanted to get a few more comments from you. In terms of the faith-based response that we have in your book, talk to us about what was striking to you.
Well, this is, I don't like to speak in too much detail about another contributor's work, but rather we want them to express themselves. But Derek Bell's foreword talks a lot about this question that many of us had wondered about. Remembering again who this population is, and I'm really talking not just about the very poorest, most destitute of the victims, but really across New Orleans. You know, these are largely very Christian communities, and some of them have been struggling for a long time. And so the question necessarily arises when you get hit with something of truly biblical proportions. And then on top of it, you are dehumanized and left to languish by your brother. There are some questions, I would assume, and Derek assumed, about where is God and where is God for me? And so he takes that up, and, you know, part of his conclusion ultimately is of course, that God is inside us. And it's catastrophes like this which require that we take a closer look at how God is represented and manifest inside us. So I think that's a lot of what's going on there.
And before you go, can you tell people where they can get a copy of your book?
Oh, of course. Well, you can find it. You can find it online with the usual suspects, Barnes and Noble, Amazon. And I'm pleased to say it's showing up in more and more bookstores now. The release date was just the other day, and so it's making its way into bookstores now over the next days and weeks.
Very good.
And if I could just add one more point before I go, because I don't want to end on a negative note. That I really think that there are some specific things that people in different communities across the United States might want to be thinking about, because the idea of a debate on race and class is sometimes very abstract. But clearly what you needed in New Orleans and what you need in a lot of other cities with very vulnerable, poor populations of color is you need jobs and you need housing. You need jobs that pay a living wage, and you need housing that is not isolated from the rest of the population, as we saw in New Orleans, that you're cut off from shared resources. So the idea of self-sufficiency has been a little overrated, as some people respond to the failures of the victims themselves to take care of themselves. Had they been in communities, more people had cars, where there was better transportation, where there was mass transit, where the police were not afraid, public officials were not afraid to send resources, that is, in more middle-class neighborhoods, it would not have been as vulnerable and as trapped and as isolated as they were. So thinking about mixed income housing development, inclusionary zoning, and living wage legislation are things that people in cities across the country can do in their own communities to make a real difference in reducing that kind of vulnerability and poverty.
David Trout, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Liz, for having me. I'm grateful.
And, John, I want to get to the political piece of this. In terms of how much the politics played in the decision-making that occurred in the aftermath of Katrina, was this a political response, or was this again, the race piece?
Well, I think you can't completely separate the two. On the one hand, there is a kind of a broader philosophical position that predominates not just in this administration, but probably the last couple of administrations that focuses on government being much, much smaller and relies upon massive privatization of government services in order to deliver those.
Isn't that really just a shift of government help, or at least, because there wasn't a whole lot of money spent on poor people to begin with, but
That's right. The
shift in attitude of the reality is that it's shifting money from the poor to the haves.
Because
they're all getting government help. I mean, none of these people that are criticizing government or the business, the privatization is just moving government money to privates.
I think that's right, and I think that part of the consequences for Katrina operates on all levels. On the one hand, the planning by FEMA seems to have been totally inadequate in large part because of their focus on, you know, sort of awarding pre-contracts rather than preparing for this particular situation. It's apparent that this sort of privatized approach was inadequate in order to respond to a significant disaster. And then right now, that approach is the predominant approach in rebuilding New Orleans. Essentially, the plan, such as there is one, is that if you want to rebuild your house, go back and do it yourself. But the difficulty there is that even though Congress has allocated literally billions of dollars to be distributed, none of that money a year later has been distributed to New Orleans homeowners. Those homeowners are finding trouble with their insurance companies getting payments for homes. And so this sort of disaggregated and non-planned approach is the predominant approach of our political culture now, and that isn't a directly racial kind of critique. But at the same time, there are undoubtedly racial dimensions, because race is a part of our life, and race politics is quite real. And in Louisiana, what that comes down to is a sort of partisan politics as well. Louisiana was uncommon for southern states in that it has a very high voter turnout at every election, but particularly for national elections. We have very high black voter registration and very high black voter turnout. It's a place where, from an electoral perspective, black Louisianans are very empowered. And that made black Louisianans a political juggernaut. You could not win the state without either winning the New Orleans vote or finding a strategy that would neutralize that vote.
Mm.
And that's made Louisiana politics both very racialized and very contested. And now with New Orleans sort of in its current state, all the game has changed. So Louisiana was likely to lose a congressional seat in 2010 just because it isn't growing as quickly as other states in the South especially. But now it may lose two. And in any event, the reapportionment for those districts will be in the hands of whoever runs the state legislature in 4 years. And I think that that's made this a very high-stakes arrangement. Louisiana can go from a state that's been contested, one that voted for President Bush in both elections, but also one that voted for President Clinton in both elections. It can go from this kind of contested state to a very solidly Republican state just because of the demographic changes wrought by the storm.
And as a result of the inaction, we know that this administration is spending millions of dollars to create a database in Iraq for news articles, but there's been no database compiled about where everybody in New Orleans went.
Well, it's not clear. It's possible that FEMA has that information, but they have refused to share it in all circumstances based on privacy arguments.
That were not articulated by those whose privacy would be revealed.
That's right. they're protecting the privacy of the people on the list. It's not clear, you know, how accurate or up-to-date such a list may be, but there was litigation here in Louisiana by elected officials in the New Orleans area trying to get in contact with their constituents, and FEMA resisted the sharing of the list and ultimately prevailed in that litigation.
So what's the future, John? Look into your crystal ball, your Louisiana crystal ball, and tell us, what's the future for New Orleans? Will it, and in terms of politics, will New Orleans be able to come back from this? Will black folks come back to New Orleans? Is there a place for them to come back to?
Right now, there's not much of a place, and the sort of the pessimistic side of New Orleans right now is that it's a place where New Orleans is fairly vibrant. Black middle class is having a lot of trouble returning to. While many of them are in a position to try and rebuild, the lack of any plans, it just leaves people without any sense of where they might be able to rebuild. With respect to the city in general, I think the main point of my essay is that rebuilding is being hampered by the lack of housing for working class people of all stripes. That's been obscured a little bit because a lot of the rebuilding and a lot of the cleanup right now is being done by immigrants from around the world, and particularly from South and Central America. And those people are living in very austere circumstances. I think most of last winter they were living in tents and, you know, sort of trailer houses provided by their employers. But that's not sustainable in the long term. And so until New Orleans comes up with a mechanism for poor and working class people of all stripes to live, then it's going to be hard for the city to grow very rapidly. The optimistic side, of course, is that this legislation funding the sort of grants to individual homeowners, if it does get off the ground, might be a mechanism for powering the rebuilding of precisely the kind of housing we're talking about. In a way, it's sort of aimed at people who are underinsured, and that might allow poor and working class folk who happen to own their homes a way back. now the rental stock is not affordable for poor and working class people, and it's unlikely to become affordable anytime soon. So it's going to be very difficult. On the other hand, New Orleans has some attributes that that counsel in its favor. I mean, the oil and gas infrastructure means that the city really won't be abandoned in the way that some people had suggested. And its tourist industry may be able to drive it, depending upon, you know, its success at bringing its residents back.
John White, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Wake Up Call. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
This is Liz Brown. I'll be back same time, same place next week. Don't forget that tomorrow from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. at 1020 North Taylor, we have the International Urban Institute meeting. This time, we are going to be showing the documentary by Spike Lee, A Year After Katrina. Spike Lee uncovers what really happened in when the levees broke. So you need to come on down. It's free. We'll have a little bit of breakfast there for you. And a wonderful opportunity to have a discussion. Come on out down and join Irene J. Smith and myself when the levees broke tomorrow morning. The address is 1020 North Taylor. The time is 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. I will see you all tomorrow. Until then, stay strong.
Peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
Say that God bless is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below knee.
I think I'm hearing.